You know what today is?
I got you, babe.
Tuesday.
February 2nd.
Groundhog Day.
Dumbest day ever invented. I'd rather see Sonny Bono come up and see if he sees his shadow.
That would be something.
I know, in heaven.
I would love to see that.
Every February 2nd, thousands gather at Gobbler's Knob. Yes, Gobbler's Knob.
Some jokes just write themselves.
It's in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. They await the spring forecast from a special groundhog known as Punxsutawney Phil. How old is Punxsutawney Phil, and how many are there?
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is they've used a series of them over the years, of course.
According to legend, Bill, little Billy.
Yes.
According to legend, if Phil sees
my shadow,
you get scared and run away.
Every time.
According to legend, if Phil sees his shadow, the United States is in store for 6 more weeks of winter weather. But if Phil doesn't see his shadow, the country should expect warmer temperatures and the arrival of an early spring.
May I ask a question? My hand is up.
Yes.
Ooh, ooh,
little Billy?
Ooh, 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 ooh. If everyone knows that this is fake, and everyone does know that it's fake, why does this get as much attention as it gets?
I don't know, and I am starting a Facebook page, Boycott Groundhog Day.
I'll sign up.
I'm not kidding. This is the dumbest stuff. Because when you look according to reason, if a groundhog comes up and sees his shadow, that means the sun's very strong. So you would think spring is coming sooner, but it's the opposite. And how do we know if he saw his shadow? Does he speak? Does he say, "Ooh, shadow"? I hate this day.
It's so amazing all the attention it gets, and we're adding to it, by the way.
No, because from this point forward, Facebook page.
But watch the news. If you watch the news, I mean, yes, what happened in Iowa will get a little bit of coverage, no doubt about it. But for the rest of it, it's some quick mention. And by the way, expect 6 more weeks of winter because the groundhog saw his shadow. It doesn't make sense.
Can I tell you something? It's February 2nd, Groundhog Day 2016, in the year of our Lord. We're automatically going to get 6 more weeks of winter and then some.
Right. Has nothing to do with a random groundhog.
Do you know where this all started?
Hell. Did it?
Groundhog Day originates from an ancient celebration of the midway point between the winter solstice and the spring equinox.
Then let's celebrate that. Let's have a carnival.
The day right in the middle of astronomical winter. That's what we're in right now.
Or gastronomical winter. Some people I know are celebrating that.
According to superstition, sunny skies that day signify a stormy and cold second half of winter, while cloudy skies indicate the arrival of warm weather. Look up. You see a sun?
I am looking up. It's just gray.
So it's a crappy day.
Yeah, yeah.
And that means an early spring, even though snow is coming. Aren't there blizzards predicted?
In some places, yeah. Yeah.
The trail of Phil's history leads back to Clymer Frias, city editor of the Punxsutawney Spirit newspaper.
I knew Clymer Frias was behind this. This has Clymer Frias written all over it.
Inspired by a group of local groundhog hunters, whom he would dub.
Imagine that.
Vermin.
Mom, Dad, I met the guy of my dreams. What does he do? Well, at least it's not Clymer Frias.
These hunters, groundhog hunters, would be dubbed the Punxsutawney Groundhog Club. Frias declared Phil as America's official forecasting groundhog in 1887. 1887,
this
has been
going
on.
We're still doing it.
As he continued to embellish the groundhog story every year, other newspapers picked it up, and soon everyone looked to Punxsutawney Phil for the prediction of when spring would return to the country. So last time we're mentioning it, I'm starting the Facebook page today.
It gave us a great Bill Murray movie.
Awesome.
Thank
and
you for that.
And Stephen Tobolowsky in that movie, I believe, at MovieCo tonight is the Nick DiGilio Film Fest.
Correct.
And Stephen Tobolowsky might be Skyping in. That's the plan. You have got to watch this Primary Instinct.
Is it that good?
I'm telling you, it is utterly thought-provoking and it pulls on your heartstrings. It makes you laugh. It's great.
My guess is you saw it and I did not. It's about his life as an actor, as a character actor, right? And other things.
Yes, and his life,
right,
too, and his parents and growing up and what,
Is Clymer Frias mentioned at all?
No, but there is a groundhog sitting on top of his head, and oddly enough, Stephen Tobolowsky looks like Donald Trump with a groundhog on his head.
That's not hard to imagine.
All comes full circle.
I can see that.
I'm starting the Facebook page. Let's boycott it. From this point forward, we do not discuss it.
No more discussion of Groundhog Day. It's dead to us. In a minute, we're going to take a break, and then I want to check in with our friend Steve Bertrand, who yesterday said that it was like Christmas to him. He was so excited about what was going to happen in Iowa. Let's find out if it really, if it came to fruition for him or not. That's just moments away. Stick around. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Yesterday,
Christmas morning.
That's what Steve called it yesterday. He was so excited about what was happening in Iowa. Steve, my guess is it lived up to your expectations and then some.
Yeah, it was a big night, wasn't it? Yeah. It was a lot of fun. You was watching some of the caucuses. You know, they had cameras inside as they were negotiating. And I had a couple friends I was texting and emailing with as they were inside a caucus. Big fun, big fun.
And what did they say that surprised you? Was there anything that shocked you yesterday?
Well, nothing, it's just really? Always surprising to me that if on the Democratic side, you're going to go in with your neighbors and stand, you know, in the crowd who you want to support.
Right.
You know, so your next door neighbor knows who you voted for, basically.
Right.
I think that's
but don't you think kind of in a way, I mean, it's weird, but you kind of know who your friends and neighbors are for or against at this point, don't you, to some extent?
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't know who I would think you were going to vote for.
Oh.
You know? And yeah. So if we were to go in together, you might go one direction, I'd go the other. So.
Yeah.
But I think it was a big night for Marco Rubio. I think Donald Trump seemed gracious.
Didn't he?
So what's wrong with that equation?
Uncharacteristically gracious.
Well, you know, everyone says that he's been growing as a candidate.
Yeah.
And this, he certainly suffered a couple of growing pains yesterday, and we'll see how he comes out with it.
And he said, Steve, he may buy a farm there in Iowa, so look for that to happen.
Every politician who says they're going back to Iowa is right. Never going back to Iowa.
I know that.
You know, they all take to the stage, I'm going to come back here. Well, you are not. If you say it, it's not true.
I asked Steve earlier, because I watched way more of it. It was like Grease to me. You know how I didn't intend on watching Grease, and it was on, and I'm like, well, I'm here, and it's on. I might as well watch it. The same thing happened with the caucuses yesterday. And I always want to say cauci, and that's not correct. It is caucuses. As we were getting a speech from Ted Cruz, there was a man behind him who was almost orgasmic. Every time Ted Cruz said anything, he got so unbelievably excited. And I said to Steve, I don't know who that guy is, but maybe you do. Who is that guy, Steve?
It was Congressman Steve King, probably.
I believe it was. Yeah. He looks a lot like Gerald McCraney from Simon and Simon.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the conservative like road to Iowa goes through Congressman Steve King. He kind of held auditions last summer at a couple of events. And so, you know, he got behind Cruz. So for Cruz to win is a big win for him, too, in that state.
When Ted Cruz took to the stage with his wife, there were about six people up on the stage, and each one of them were very happy for Ted Cruz. But when he got to this particular guy, he was just it was amazing. How I mean, he was hugging him, kissing him, and like every time Ted Cruz said anything, he was like, "Oh, thank you, Jesus!" Like every single time, he was just so excited about everything. Then, just moments later, Hillary Clinton comes out and she's making her speech, and there's a kid behind her who keeps doing weird things.
He's right behind her. Face.
Well, not initially. Like at first, he would sneeze real big. So he would sneeze and it would make a big deal out of it. Then he starts doing a weird dance. Then as she's making her speech, he puts stickers on his face and he's making all kinds of faces. And I think to myself, because the camera was, at CNN, they were aware of this kid because they kept lowering it so much so that Bill Clinton, who was next to her, it cut his face in half. You saw his nose and his mouth, but you couldn't see his eyes or his forehead. And I went, CNN is so on to this kid.
Yeah, but poor Bill Clinton. It turned into Clutch Cargo. It was just his lips.
I know.
Yeah, but so I saw that kid this morning. You showed me.
Well,
and are we sure that...
My first guess was that there was some emotional problems
right,
with this
kid. There was a special needs kid.
That's what I assumed. That's what I thought. But now Kevin did some research on this kid, and it turns out it's not that way at all. He's just a smart aleck kid. He goes to Drake University. He got himself a nice position, and he decided, I'm going to let the camera know that I'm here. And he did that for about 5 or 10 minutes.
I think it's really funny.
You do not.
I do. I mean,
he should be kicked out of school today.
No, he should not.
He's an embarrassment to Drake University.
You know what? I like that a kid is into it. He's a freshman at Drake.
But I don't choose.
He's not into it.
I think he's a fan of one of the other candidates and just said to his friends, I'm going to mess with Hillary Clinton. Watch what I can do.
He had Hillary stickers on his face.
I know, but that doesn't mean he's a fan of hers.
He was mocking the whole thing.
He was.
I don't really think he should be kicked out of school, but if he really is fully aware of what he did and he just thought he was being funny, he should be smacked. Because he should.
Well, he looks like a dope, but well, I mean, that was his intention to tell all his friends.
That's terrible behavior. You don't go to a candidate's election night celebration and then mock them behind their backs. That's awful.
It was a strange place to assume focus, which is what he was doing. There's no way you could see this and not notice that kid so much. So, like I said, that CNN, somebody in the producer's booth went, uh-oh. Move the camera way down. Keep going down. But then every once in a while, they had to show like a longer shot, and you saw this kid just kind of moving his body around and his face around. And Steve, I'm watching this, and I said to my wife, I want to make fun of this kid, but I can't. I know something's got to be wrong with this guy, but it's not.
Well, it sure looks like it. And, you know, it's not like it's the run-of-the-mill speech or where you're being a little silly.
Right.
This is an election night, big night.
Right.
And it's just bad behavior.
It is, but everybody's talking about him.
So what? We talked about, you know, John Wayne Gacy, too, but it wasn't good stuff.
Oh, come on. Let's not compare him to John Wayne Gacy.
I'm not comparing him to him. I'm just saying, just because we're talking about him doesn't mean what he did was a good thing.
Peter Klinksales, that's the boy's name.
Okay,
had a
that
seat,
explains it.
Mr. Klinksales. Peter Klinksales had a seat almost directly behind of Hillary Clinton's head while she spoke last night, giving spectators a clear view of his goofy, stickered face. On each one of his cheeks, he had a giant Hillary Clinton sticker. I was just a kid wearing a Hillary sticker, Klinksales told the Daily News, that's the New York Daily News, after attending Clinton's Olmsted Center speech last night. Klinksales, who is studying vocal performance at Drake.
There you go. He's in theater and stuff.
How can you make excuses for the
listen,
his bad
I don't
behavior?
Think I don't think it was right of him to do it, but it made me laugh. I'm sorry. It did. I'm sorry.
It was so distracting.
That's the point.
I'm going to have to think about whether I accept your apology.
I'm not apologizing. It was a stupid thing to do, but...
But, Wendy, what did you... When Steve was being inducted into the WGN Walk of Fame, do you remember what you were doing? You were standing behind him with Wendy Steiner stickers all over your face, and I was looking at you instead of paying attention to Steve's speech.
Let me put it this way. If this was my kid, I would... kill him.
Well, it's not my kid. We're saying the same thing.
I know, but it's just kind of it's amusing. I mean, I'm sure Hillary, I'm surprised she didn't turn around and go,
"Hey,
will you cut that out with that voice of hers?"
If I was the school president, and cuz that was an event at Drake University.
Yeah.
And he is a Drake student.
Yeah.
I would imagine he's having a sit down with
someone. Don't you think he
got
called into an office today and they go,
"I would hope
Peter,
so.
What are you doing?
What were you? Look, you're 19. You're supposed to be a little stupid at this age.
Right.
But let's not do this again.
Right. Klinksales, who I mentioned, studying vocal performance at Drake, claims that he tried to sneak a saxophone into the rally for former President Bill Clinton to play, but was turned away.
Oh, see, I love this kid.
He returned and snagged a seat behind the stage.
How does he get that stage?
That's what I couldn't figure out. Because if you watched any of these speeches last night, and I did, I saw all of them. I didn't see Bernie Sanders, but I saw all the rest of them. It's prominent people behind them who have something to do with that guy or girl getting to where they are. And then there's this guy, the sticker guy behind her. So I can't figure out how he got that very prominent seat.
I still can't keep track, Leslie. You love him or you would kill him?
My name's Wendy.
I'm Wendy. I'm sorry. Oh, my God. It's only been 2 years.
I know. That's all right.
Oh, my. You've got me flustered.
Well, here's the thing. I think he's a dope, okay? But it cracks me up. And the only thing I can say in his defense is kids are getting involved in the election process
for
once.
But this isn't the right way to get involved.
I know it's not. I know it's not. But it's just, it adds a little levity. Again, if this was my kid.
We're going to raise the voting age to 40 after this kid.
Donald Trump brings the levity.
Although someone claims, and I don't know if you were looking at the text, Steve, but if somebody did this behind Trump, you would be loving this.
No,
right
I now. Don't. I wouldn't. I think it's bad behavior. That's not true. I mean, I can understand why you might think that, but I wouldn't.
I don't say that's what you, I'm just reading.
I understand.
A text.
Yeah.
And here's the thing, too. It's like Hillary is so tight that I feel like this is just the wrong person to be doing it behind. You know what I mean?
Can I tell you that my text up here, are almost 24 hours behind. So,
oh, are they?
Oh, okay.
I'm getting texts now for the end of your show yesterday afternoon. I'm not kidding.
All right.
It just, it makes me laugh. It does. It's stupid. It's bad behavior. But, I mean.
Well, I spent the whole speech watching this kid feeling terrible because I'm like, something is so wrong with this kid. So, you know, he obviously can't control himself. But it turns out he's just a Drake Theater student that wanted the spotlight on him, and he got it.
Well, he can act because we all thought he was.
Right. They're going to do a movie based on this kid.
It's just, that's what happens now. I know. I'm mad at the people who let him get in that seat. They're the ones at fault.
Here's a quote. They asked him how he got there. Hey, no one questioned me, he says.
Come on. So it's not his responsibility. It's someone who didn't know him, who didn't stop him. You're angry with someone who didn't stop him from behaving badly?
I just, you know, kudos to him. He pushed his way through, got there, and here's another text. Maybe Steve Rodham Bertrand should take a break and collect himself.
I'm going to need a moment.
All right.
I didn't even see it. I went to bed. I didn't see the speech, but, and I would feel this way for any candidate.
Is it possible, Kevin, can we get it on our Facebook page for people who did not see this last night?
We're trying to contact him,
Kevin,
too.
Kevin, I want Peter Klingscales. Bring me the head of Peter Klingscales. We got to talk to this kid. We'll take a quick break. We'll get that video up on our Facebook page, Bill F. and Wendy Snyder, shortly. More show coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
You used to call me on my cell phone. Day night when you need my
I think I can explain why this song is being played. We were talking about this kid that the internet has dubbed Sticker Kid. His real name is Peter Klingscales, which is also my real name.
I love that name.
It's a great name, Peter Klingscales. He attends Drake University. He made quite a spectacle out of himself yesterday as Hillary Clinton was making her speech after the Iowa caucus. He stood behind her and just did crazy things. He was sneezing real big and dancing and putting stickers on his face. I was sure that he was having some emotional troubles, but no, as it turns out, he's just a theater kid from Drake University that seems to enjoy the spotlight a great deal.
And Mark has called in, and you are also a theater kid from Drake University?
I'm a Drake graduate, actually.
Congratulations. And you texted us, and I suggested you call in. Is this common place for Drake students to try and get attention?
Well, especially in fine arts, we're taught to be pretty aggressive because jobs are not easy to get and recognition is not always easy to get. So anything you can get is good. It's interesting because I'll bet anything this kid's from Chicago because it's the Iowa kids that were always very quiet and very, you know, somber. But the Chicago kids were the ones that were always gung-ho.
Well, have him send a resume. I'll hire him.
Mark, there's a class there at Drake called Upstaging the Presidential Nominees. Is that a class you took?
No, we didn't have that back in my day. I was in the 70s.
Taking a look at your commute.
Oops, sorry. I think it's fun. It is annoying, and it is rude behavior. And a lot of people support you, Steve Bertrand, and say, you know, this kid needs a good butt whooping. It's just funny. This whole thing has kind of become a circus. And if it happened behind Trump, wouldn't we be laughing about it?
Trump would have strangled him.
Yeah, you're right.
I think I would be laughing. I mean, Trump gave last night a very good speech. And if someone was behind him mocking him during that speech, I would have been just as angry or, you know,
he would have done, as Bill said, he would have turned around and said, hey, you, get out of here.
Well, he offered, I don't know if you heard this tape yesterday, but there were stories that people were bringing tomatoes to his rally. And he even said yesterday, if you see anybody with a tomato, take care of them. Do whatever you need to do. I'll pay your legal fees. So he's much more aggressive when it comes to stuff like this.
And question for all of you, why didn't the Secret Service get this guy out of the way?
Well, that's not their job. Their job is to protect her safety.
Or aren't there bouncers there? There has to be somebody that could have removed him.
Chris Christie. He's the bouncer.
He was in New Hampshire already.
Oh.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you very much for calling. And we'll keep your eye on this Klingscales because he may become something because of this.
Secretary of the Interior. We'll find a cabinet position for him.
Hi, Karen. How are you?
Hey, good. Love your show.
Thank you.
Anyway, can you imagine the parents who are paying $40,000 plus for this kid doing his little happy dance. How embarrassing.
I imagined his mom and dad watching this going, look at that kid behind Hillary. It looks a little bit like Peter. Wait a minute.
Oh my God, it is.
Yeah. Terrible.
Anyway, I thought, no way. I just, you know, how are they going to go, you know, to places that know this kid? I mean, unless he's always been like this.
Right.
I mean, embarrassing plus. Sorry, Mom and Dad. I really screwed up. All right. Have a good day.
You too, Karen.
Thank you, Karen.
I thank the dear Lord above that was not my kid doing that.
I know.
And I know that the parents didn't see it live in action because he would have stopped dancing to read a text that was from his mom or dad going, you idiot.
Right, knock it off. Your father and I are paying $45,000 a year for you to dance like that with stickers behind Mrs. Clinton. Stop it. Your question earlier was, why didn't somebody go and stop him? The way the cameras were, it would have been so it was disruptive already.
Right.
But if Secret Service or somebody connected with the whole proceedings would have went and talked to him or taken him out, that would have really been destructive.
I think more than this.
And it's also, you guys know this better than me, right? But it's deceptive in that he was probably a lot further from her than it looked like on TV.
Well, I was trying to figure that out, Steve. It looked to be he couldn't have been more than 10 feet behind her.
You don't think?
No, just the way
it was
angled.
He was in like the sixth row behind her, six rows of people standing. So,
right, so let's see.
And boy, did he get the perfect shot.
Yeah.
Right?
Constantly. You saw him. That's why they messed with the camera angle and they had to pull it down. It was such an unnatural angle. You never cut people's faces off or heads off on a live TV shot, but all you saw was Bill Clinton like from the nostrils down.
And if you look at him, this Peter Klink scales is like the Hillary and Bill Clinton thought bubble. He's right above
right.
both of their heads.
Right. And I also want to throw in the fact that I'm sure I'm not the only one who saw this kid and thought something's not quite right with this kid. So how would it have looked for Secret Service to come over and escort him out under those conditions? They would have looked awful. So you just had to let the kid run and do whatever he wanted for 10 minutes.
I'm sorry. This is a live thing. There has to be people that just go, excuse me, come with me.
Right.
Although imagine if he made a scene or something.
Right.
And then they had to throw a punch. Oh, this could have been awesome.
He did. He was already making a scene. I don't know what else he could have done.
Right. What is he going to do? Blow a bubble?
Right.
We have got to track this kid down.
We're trying to find Peter Klink.
Or let's
scales.
Find his parents. That's who I'd really like to talk to.
I'm sure they're doing press today.
They're at a bar that opened at 6 a.m.
Right. All right. A break. We'll check in with Bridget Carey from CNET next. Stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. She is the senior editor of CNET. She's the host of the CNET Daily Update. You can see it right there on your computer. And she's Bridget Carey. She's all three in one. Hi, Bridget.
Hey, how you doing?
Excellent.
We're doing great. We were having fun talking about the sticker kid, thanks to social media and the interweb and technology. Behind Hillary Clinton at the Iowa caucus, there was a goofy Drake University freshman who was dancing and sneezing and putting stickers on his face. So gotta love technology.
Oh, yeah. I did see that on my feed this morning, too.
And how is technology affecting the Super Bowl this year? We can't say Super Bowl.
Big game.
The
you
big
have to
game.
Say
That's
big game. You're
so
going to get sued
dumb.
Now.
All right. How's it affecting the big football game?
Yes. All right. Well, this year's game is different because it's coming from the most high-tech stadium there is. You know, you remember when there was a big blackout during the game because it couldn't handle everything.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how this one can stand up because we're wired. It's Levi Stadium. It's in Santa Clara, California, and this is like near the heart of Silicon Valley. So when they built this thing, they had it set so that everyone in the stands who wants to tweet and Snapchat and do everything on their phones the whole time, they'll be able to withstand it Wi-Fi wise because they're expecting like 72,000 fans in this thing, all with their phones going crazy. And on top of being able to be wired with like 1,200 Wi-Fi access points and like 400 miles of fiber and cable and all those crazy numbers. They also have this app they created, so people in the stadium will be able to order food to their seat without ever having to get up to the concession stand. So they're really trying to make this super high-tech, not just on, like, being able to handle people's phones, but also things you can do on your phone. And behind the scenes, there's going to be a lot, too, in terms of security, which you never get to really see about that. But, you know, they're going to have cameras everywhere, screens everywhere.
I like app to order in your seat, but how many orders do you think are going to be completely messed up?
Yeah.
I know. I couldn't trust it. I mean, I'm the kind of person who has to go there, especially with how crazy it'll be with the Super Bowl. I think, though, there's a few other things that, you know, even if you're not going, there's some interesting, you know, tech things to think about. If you're just watching for the commercials for the first time this year, Amazon's going to have a commercial for its talking smart speaker, you know, that answers to the name Alexa. So that they've been teasing that. So it's hard to believe that after all these years, Amazon's never had a commercial in the Super Bowl. But yes, now they will.
That does seem weird.
Yeah. It's actually not a lot of tech commercials apparently this year in the Super Bowl, just a few cell phones and Amazon. Also, if you're streaming it, if you're someone who doesn't have cable, you can stream this for free. You don't have to prove that you subscribe to cable. You can do it on an app from the CBS, you know, apps on your Roku, or you can also just go on the website. You know, it's pretty easy to kind of stream from your computer and have it beam to your television if you want. But because we're seeing it, we also review TVs and we help, you know, make sure your TV looks just right. So if you're hosting a party, I would say you have to go online to get our tips on how to get your TV, like, perfectly, like all the colors look good and all the audio looks good. And
you need the calibration. You definitely do.
Is that a calibration issue? Is it? Yeah.
Yes.
That's CNET.com.
Yeah, here's a really easy tip to remember. All right, so when you're adjusting the color, make sure you're adjusting it with green on the screen, because green is the most common color you're going to see during the game. You don't want it to be too dull or yellow. And also, the movie or cinema preset, because there's some preset, like, modes. There's sports mode. There's movie mode. The movie mode tends to be best for green than any other picture mode. So don't go with sports mode. Go with movie mode.
That is interesting. That sports mode is kind of weird because it turns, like, a reverb effect on.
Oh,
so you're
it?
Hearing like you're in a stadium, and I don't really like it.
Oh.
Right. Yeah, I'm not a fan of it either. But that's if you don't want to mess with a bunch of settings, just like go to the presets, go to the movie mode. There
Bridget,
you go.
I don't know if you saw, since we're talking about football and how it pertains to technology, during the AFC Championship game, the tablets that were being used by the New England Patriots all went on the blink. They couldn't use them for a portion of the game. How does something like that happen? My guess was, and I've been told by others that it's impossible, somebody could have somehow jammed the signal. But that's possible,
sabotage?
Isn't it? Sabotage.
Well, Microsoft made a deal so their Surface tablets are the only ones allowed on the sidelines, and they just had a nightmare of PR ever since they did this, because you have the announcers calling them iPads, and then on top of that, they're not working. And it looks like, in this case, it was the fact that the network went down. So in that stadium, is that network able to handle, you know, the coach who's on the sideline along with everyone in the stands, you know, with interference? Like, I don't know if that's built. So now you got to watch and see, okay, in this new state-of-the-art stadium where the demand for, like, how much data is going through is extreme, can it still handle it, and will there be any glitchy surface moments because it could connect to the Wi-Fi? And yeah, and the coaches all say that they just go back to the pen and paper and the
sure the way football was played for thousands of years prior without tablets. All right,
like barbarians.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
You know, and speaking of apps and commercials for the big game, we had mentioned this last week that Taco Bell is unveiling a new snack for their commercial. You're going to see it during the Super Bowl, but if you get the Taco Bell app, you can get the snack 2 days before it's available. It's
but they
a crazy
won't say what
world.
It is, though.
Well, we revealed what it is.
Oh,
I can't remember what it was.
Huh.
And just, it's so cool watching TV now. When I was watching the NHL All-Star Skills Competition, you know, the people can get involved. You can vote on who hashtag something, and you tweet out who you think won. And it's fun to think that you had a voice in who won the competitions.
Yeah, it really has become interactive, especially if you don't really care about either team. You're just on your phone the whole time, you know, on Twitter, being entertained by what people are saying about it.
All right, so if right now we're at the stage where people can interactively do what Wendy just said or order food from their telephone while they're watching the game, what's coming up down the line in terms of that sort of technology? What's going to be happening in 2 or 3 or 5 years?
You mean at the next Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Talking about, yeah.
Big game.
We don't want lawsuits, Bridget. You understand.
Right. I totally understand, yeah. You know, I think it's about getting it right. You know,
yeah.
There's a lot of show-off tech happening. Like, oh, yeah, order the food. But just like you said, like, is that really going to go right? Or being able to, right now, there's a lot of just show off that you're here at the moment. So really everyone's just obsessed with saying, hey, look where I am. And look, I have a cool, fun filter I put on my picture that says Super Bowl on it or whatever it is. And they're just kind of all showing off. But is there a new way to show off? Is there a new way to impress your friends that you're somewhere where they can't be?
That's what it all comes down to, doesn't it?
It's bragging.
Yeah.
I mean, all the people who are on vacation right now while we're in the cold, when they put themselves drinking a margarita in Cancun, it's just bragging. That's all people do. They just want to make themselves look better than everyone else.
So technology is really just a unit by which we can brag by when you stop and think about it. That's all it is.
That's right.
Huh.
They already predicted the ending of the game. There are lots of algorithms that played it out, and like Madden, the video game Madden, they already said it's gonna be with the Panthers winning at the last second, and you know last year they got the score exactly right when they played out the game. So you never know.
How about that?
How you just get the simulation?
Every move is planned.
Yep.
All right. Her name is Bridget Carey, and she is the host of the CNET update. What do you have coming up if we go to CNET.com and click on the update?
Well, we are talking about some of the stuff we talked about today, but also some recent stuff we've been talking about is that there's a new Galaxy S7 phone coming out, and it's being announced later this month. It's going to be a busy month for mobile news. So if you're an Android fan looking for a new phone, you're definitely going to want to see what to expect if you're thinking about buying it.
Thank you so much. May the tech be with you.
Thanks, Bridget. Have a great weekend. All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got news from Steve and then more show coming your way next. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thanks, Steve. Great news. Good news.
Thanks, Bill. Welcome. I tried to find the really good stuff.
I liked it.
Today.
It was all stuff. It was things that are happening now.
Right.
And it was, that's why they call it news, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's new.
Mm-hmm. I got a feel-good story for both of you.
What is your feel-good story?
Well, you know how we learned about this goofy kid? What's his name?
Peter Klinkscales.
I knew you wouldn't forget it.
I think that's it. It's Peter Klinkscales.
You are so funny. You will never forget that name.
That's a great name.
Well, he was dancing and making a fool of himself behind the Clintons at the Iowa caucus. That is using your kiddom for evil, but there's somebody who did something for the good of himself. A student bought a website, which you can do. I'm on GoDaddy.com.
Mm-hmm.
StickerKid.com is taken, by the way. Is that what they're calling this kid?
That's his nickname, yeah. Sticker Kid.
All right. Well, there's the student, Sanme Ved. He bought Google.com.
Oh, I read about this.
This is amazing. And some websites are 99 cents. You don't have to go to GoDaddy. There are other places where you can find out if a domain is available. And sometimes they're more money if they have been used before. There's a bit of a demand. But this kid, Sanme Ved, saw this web address, Google.com, for $12. It was on Google Domains in September, and they wanted it back.
So what must happen is at some point you buy it and there's an expiration date. Do you buy it in 1 year or 5 year intervals or something?
You can do it as 1 year, 2 year, or you can just have automatic renewal on your credit.
You'd think there'd be
card.
An intern or someone at Google whose job it was to. All right, I want you to sit here and I want you to watch for the expiration date.
Here's the thing, though. After student Sanme Ved bought the prestigious web address for $12 after spotting it for sale on Google Domains in September, the company shelled out a mere $6,000 excuse me, $6,006.13 for its safe return. Not bad for an investment that lasted a little more than a minute. Vet alerted Google right away and his purchase was canceled. But it's not quite the sum you'd think that Google would give him.
You would think that'd be worth hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars.
Oh, yeah. It's not quite the sum you think the web giant would be prepared to fork over for the address on which its entire multi-billion dollar business is built. The seemingly random figure that Google paid Ved for the return of its domain name is Google spelled numerically.
Oh, the number
6,600
looks like the word Google. Is that what they're getting at?
Yeah, but I guess the 3 is an E backwards.
It's right. Like on your calculator when you would spell out Shell Oil upside down.
Or hello.
Or hello. Yeah.
It was always Shell Oil, yeah. Wasn't it?
Well, there was a story that would go through it. Hey, what company made this much money? You'd type in a bunch of numbers. What company made this much money last year? I don't know. And then you turn your calculator upside down. Oh, Shell Oil.
I never got the first part
of
it.
Oh, you didn't? Yeah.
That I wondered was like why the, Shell Oil was that.
That was the prefix to it.
So, yeah, that's Google spelled numerically. Squint a little and you'll see it. Squinting at
why
it.
Did this kid agree to that? I mean, I know it was a good deed, but he had Google by the Googles at that point. He could have had any. He could have said, I want a million, 10 million.
This guy is studying at Babson College in Massachusetts. Ved previously worked as an account strategist at Google from 2007 to 2012. He said he was browsing the company's tracker in September when he saw Google.com was up for grabs. He bought it, but immediately surrendered it back to the web giant. So that's why he worked for them.
That's it. He's tied in with them a little bit.
Wouldn't you have quit and then sold it to him? Instead
maybe.
Of pocketing the reward money, Ved asked Google to donate it to the Art of Living India Foundation.
Oh, he's a good person.
He's a humanitarian.
Yeah.
The company agreed and doubled it to $12,012.
They're going
to
go bankrupt now.
And 26 cents, which does not spell out Google.
No, it doesn't. Not even close. All right, I'm sure you've heard this story, and I have verified it. There was always a story that Julie Andrews and her husband, Blake Edwards, who's a film director, producer, used to think they would play this game. The two of them would play this game where they would think up titles for movies, and then they would go and they would copyright all these titles for movies so that if anybody wanted to have a movie called whatever they thought of, they made money on it.
Is this true or a hearsay?
Somebody told me about this years and years and years ago, and I didn't believe it. And then over the years, I met people who knew Julie Andrews or Blake Edwards, and I would ask, and they would always go, yeah, that's the thing that they do. That's their favorite thing in the world. And I always thought, I'm not sure that that's fair. I know that it's good business sense, but they had crazy amounts of money. Did they need to take advantage of other people's ideas like that? That seemed a little much to me.
It does seem, but I mean, wow.
When I did Major League, one of the producers on Major League, her parents are Marilyn and Suzanne. Marilyn and what's his name? They're composers. They write a lot of music for Barbara Streisand. They've written a bunch of movie scores over the years, and they're very close, or were very close, with Julie Andrews. And I asked her this story, and she's laughing, and she goes, "Oh, they love that. They do that all the time. They just sit at the dinner table and think up movie titles and write them down, and then they register them, and if somebody wants it." They make a bunch of money.
That seems risky, although I guess if you have money to throw away.
Yeah, then take the chance, I guess.
Because peepee.
Who's that?
I guess if peepee.com is available. People.
It's a urology website. I just found it.
People buy. Nope, it's not available. Peepee.com is taken.
Hold on a second. I got to make a call.
Peepeeweb.com is available. Peepee Pro.
Why did you go to that one?
Well, because I mistakenly said it, but people do buy websites like that and then hope for something.
Cash in on it.
But this guy could have gotten so much more.
Way more. Google needs Google.com. I mean, they could have switched it, I guess. There, you can do other variations. Google.org or something like that, or thegoogle.com.
Who owned Threepeat? Was that Pat Riley? Someone just texted
that. I think
it
is Pat Riley. I'm pretty sure it's Pat Riley who came up with that phrase. And then Michael Buffer, you know, the guy who says...
Let's get ready to...
Right.
I can say that.
I think you can say it, but if anyone else, like if you were making a TV show or a movie or something like that, and you used that phrase for your own benefit, you were making money off of it, somehow, I've been told, he's very litigious and he would sue you somehow.
See, but now somebody just texted, you can't copyright a title. I am not a patent attorney. I have two friends that are. I should ask them.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole Michael Buffer thing, I mean, like, you couldn't use it to profit from it. You couldn't use it in a movie.
Right.
But, I mean, you can say it. And how about Happy Birthday? Remember, you couldn't say it for a while or sing it. And then the patent expired. And how can a patent expire where it becomes public domain?
It goes into public domain.
How, though?
Even... There's characters like, I'm trying to think of what the best examples were. Superman, Batman, Mighty Mouse. Like, when you first apply for a patent, I can't remember if you get 60 years or something like that. So over the last 10 or 15 years, there have been major, major characters like the ones I just mentioned that all of a sudden are up for grabs. So can they go into public domain? I guess they can, but then the company pays a lot of money to somehow get around that and go, like, what would Disney, if Disney lost any of their main characters, or DC Comics lost Batman or Superman, where anybody could just put out Batman or Superman stuff, it could sink them. You could make the argument that that could sink those companies. So they have to go to court and say, look, I know that our patent runs out on this and that could become public domain, but for us to survive, we need these characters. We need those names.
20 years.
Is it 20? That's
yeah.
All?
And that's what I don't really understand, because after 20 years, can you renew it? Can't you renew it? Although that's why all the drug companies then go generic.
Right.
And it really costs a lot less when you get generic
right.
meds.
Right.
But they lose their patent. It seems weird to me.
I know they have to file a motion, because the story on It's a Wonderful Life is the reason it became so popular and they'd show it on TV is the company that originally made it, which I think is RKO, they just decided to not renew. They go, that's just one of our movies. It's no big deal. We don't need to renew it. So every TV station had free reign. They could just show it whenever they wanted. They never had to pay a royalty.
So how does it benefit to get a patent then? I guess when it's new and you're
because
making
of those
all the money.
Initial, boy, I'm shocked that it's only 20 years. I thought it would be a lot longer, because really in the last few years I've read articles about all the big names. I mentioned the ones earlier, like Mighty Mouse and Superman and Batman. There were like a bunch of them all within a couple of years span.
We'll try and get some more information on this, because 20 years is how long a utility patent lasts. Trademark is a different thing. Copyright's a different thing, too.
Yeah.
So that lasts for 70 years after the death of the author.
Oh.
So let's explore this a little more. 312-981-7200. Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Be sure to check out the CB app or hit up Facebook and tell Chicago's Best TV where you like to eat. Watch Chicago's Best Sundays at 10 p.m. on WGN TV. Your pick may be Chicago's Best. I would like to register the intellectual property of this show to us. Is there any?
I think the word intellectual is where we would get into problems. I think if we just left that word out, we might be okay. We're trying to figure out. We were telling you the story. Wendy found the story about this kid who realized that Google.com was up for grabs, so he bought it for a very, very small price.
But he worked for like Google Analytics,
yeah,
so he was kind of his job, really,
yeah,
to look out for them. But patent protection doesn't last forever. Patents are typically the shortest lived of all forms of intellectual property protection. This intellectualpropertylawfirms.com, there are various sites here. LegalZoom has some information as well. When a patent expires, the invention described by the patent falls into the public domain. It can be used by anyone without permission from the owner of the expired patent. The basic technologies underlying television and personal computers are good examples of valuable inventions that are no longer covered by in-force patents. But that just doesn't seem right. If you invent something,
yeah,
like the light bulb.
Right.
Thomas Alva Edison.
He did a nice job with that.
So now, well, he's dead, so his estate's not
spoiler
getting any
alert.
Money.
You got to say spoiler
<Sorry.
laughs> alert.
But it says a U.S. utility patent generally granted for 20 years from the date the patent application is filed. Periodic fees are required to maintain the enforceability of the patent. A design patent is generally granted protection for 14 years, measured from the date the design patent is granted.
It should be forever. If you invent something...
And you paid for it.
Right.
Keith, can you clarify this?
Okay, I can clarify the copyright portion of it to some extent. Now, I'm not a lawyer, but I work in the videography industry. And if I write a script or I make a movie or I do anything that's art-based, I get it for my life plus 70 years. And that comes in, or it's around 70 years. You want to check that number exactly. But what that comes from is from Steamboat Willie. Disney was about to lose Steamboat Willie, and so they went to court and had the Copyright Act changed so that they wouldn't lose Steamboat Willie past Disney's death. So 70 years past his death, and then they've made other versions of Mickey, and I don't know how that falls. But the general gist is it's usually life of the artist plus, I think it's 70 years.
Okay, so the copyright expires 70 years after the death of the inventor. And then what happens? Anybody, like I can put out, you know, Wendy's Steamboat Willie shower curtains right now?
Supposedly, yes, and it goes to public domain. Now, I don't know if, like, the rules about if businesses are considered people still, and if they are, then I don't know if, like, Disney, the corporation, creates it, if as long as the company's in business, if they get, you know, considered as life of a person. So I don't know how that works, but I know, like, Mickey Mouse was, the Steamboat Willie case is what made the extension come in for the original Mickey Mouse, and that was life of artist plus, I think it's 70 years. Now, as for Google.com domains, that's just property. That's just company-owned property, like a car or whatever. I have a website, and if my website expires, someone could grab that up if I don't do, like, an auto-registry with it.
Right, and that's different. Domains, anybody can really take, because unless you renew it and have automatic renewal is my tip, people.
Yeah.
Then, anybody could just jump in and get it.
Huh.
Right. Now, patents and stuff, I don't know anything about that. I've never been successful enough to create anything that needed one, so
someday.
But how about, like, look at something that happened a long time ago. I'll use William Shakespeare as an example. He's been dead for way more than 70 years, so could I just, like, type up William Shakespeare plays and sell them as my own? And how would that, doesn't seem right.
I believe you can do your own version of Hamlet, per se, but you could not take the version of Hamlet that was made by Warner Brothers and, you know, show that on a movie screen and charge for it.
Oh, all right.
And by the way, guys, Mickey Mouse first appeared in 1928 and will scamper into the public domain on January 1st, 2024.
I'm buying that.
Did you find it? Did you guys find it on there?
Yeah, 2024.
Yeah, I think they went and lobbied Congress to change it so they wouldn't lose Steamboat Willie.
Listen to this. In the 20-year extension given to existing copyrights by the Sonny Bono Copyright Term Extension Act.
Sonny. Yeah, I think they went through him. I think Sonny Bono was the one who proposed it for Disney, if I remember right.
Oh.
It's all coming back. This is college from like 20 years ago, but it's all starting to come back.
Because for people who don't know, Sonny Bono was a senator after he was half of Sonny and Cher. So that could be his jurisdiction, sure.
Huh. Interesting. All right,
Hopefully
thank you.
And,
you did.
And if I'm wrong, maybe someone can clarify it completely, but I believe that's right.
Keith, thank you. We appreciate it.
Great.
Thank you so much, Keith. Now, because he was a governor, or because he did something...
He was a senator, right?
I'm sorry.
Sonny Bono senator?
I'm just thinking, does he have something to do with the Sonny and Cher stuff?
Oh, I don't... That might have inspired him to do that?
I don't know. You got to find out what the Sonny Bono Copyright Term Extension Act is. I didn't even know he had something named after himself.
Yeah.
It's pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah. He didn't just sing I Got You, Babe. He did a lot of other things.
And we started the show with that today.
Right. Right. We broke our record for Sonny Bono references in one show, so congratulations for that. We're going to take a quick break, and then we've got news for you, and then a little bit of discussion with Kristen McQuarrie of the Tribune about last night's caucus results. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, last night was a pretty eventful night there in Iowa. The caucuses. Kristen McQuarrie is here.
We're going to caulk this town, caucus in and out.
Did you just write that? That was beautiful.
Kevin was my co-writer.
Weird, Wendy Yankovich, that was beautiful.
Copyright that, Kevin.
Kristen McQuarrie, writer for the Tribune, here to talk about last night's events. First of all, Wendy just pointed out that both the Tribune and the Sun-Times, of course, made mention of the fact that Ted Cruz won, but their ways of saying it are very different. Go ahead, Wendy, read along. What are they
saying? The Tribune... Their headline is, Cruz tops pack in Iowa, Democrats in dead heat. Sun-Times? Go ahead, Bill.
Cruise control.
Well, that's because we're the more, you know, intellectual, sophisticated news product.
So yes. The Sun-Times go for puns.
Yeah. Yep. No, that's a great headline.
It really
Cruise
is.
Cruise control. That's good. Yeah. Because really, that's what happened last night. I mean, it became...
A shocker?
I wouldn't say it was a shocker, but it became a three-way race now with Rubio doing so well. Trump did not win. I predicted Trump would win, so I don't know if I owe somebody a beer. But
oh, he doesn't drink, we learned yesterday.
Oh, that's right. No, I did know that, which I thought was unusual. Never has, and his kids don't either. So it turned into a three-way race. It was pretty exciting.
He was uncharacteristically kind in his concession speech. Didn't seem like the Donald Trump that we all know and some love and some loathe.
That means the Cubs are going to win this year.
Right. The world is spinning on a strange axis, Kristen. What happened? Did somebody say to him, hey, we've seen the mean Donald Trump go out there and try to be a gentleman for a change and see what you get?
All right. Well, I have two answers to that. One is I thought he was really straining not to say, you idiots. I sort of felt that. But on the other hand, he is a gracious human being. And I think being at the caucuses, when you are seeing people come out and basically stand in long lines for you and give up an evening at home, I think that's a very humbling experience. And it has to be, even for somebody like Donald Trump. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I do think he was being, you know, true and gracious.
Right.
But there's a little part of me that, you know, he hates to lose. And so he had to not enjoy having to give that speech.
I bet.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody spins this their own way, but I love all the people. Marco Rubio came in third. He had a great showing, but he still technically came in third. But for so many people last night and this morning, they're talking about how this really is a victory for Marco Rubio to come in third and do so well. What do you think?
I think it was,
yeah.
Because had he not at least had a good showing, he would be going into New Hampshire kind of with his tail between his legs. And honestly, winning Iowa can be the kiss of death. The last few election cycles, whoever wins Iowa does not go on to win.
On the Republican side.
Okay. Correct. So we're still in this game of ping pong. And as long as you are finishing strong and unexpectedly, I think that was probably Rubio had the best night of
right.
all of them.
Mm-hmm. Who will now, let's keep it to the Republican side for just a little bit. Who now will change tactics based on what happened last night?
They all will, because they're going to New Hampshire, which is a very different Republican voter. They are fiscally conservative, but socially liberal.
Mm-hmm.
The candidates who have been spending the most time in New Hampshire are the John Kasichs, Chris Christie, even Jeb Bush will do better in New Hampshire. And so we'll have to see how non-religious Republican primary voters react to someone like Ted Cruz. I don't think that he's going to do very well in New Hampshire. And they'll all kind of pull to the middle. I mean, you've got, Bernie Sanders is the senator next door.
Yeah.
So you've got really liberal Democrats and pretty moderate Republicans.
Yeah.
Now, Jeb Bush was not in Iowa.
He was, but
oh, okay.
he but he's
God,
been
so quiet.
I know, gosh,
that's
you could
so
hardly
sad.
Know, right? But he is. They're already now all in New Hampshire
okay.
doing town halls as we speak. It's so interesting because New Hampshire is such a small state that they actually get to meet these candidates in person numerous times. I heard a reporter the other night interviewing somebody from New Hampshire. Or talking about when he was interviewing somebody during the John McCain years, and the New Hampshire voter said, well, I'm not sure what I think of John McCain yet because I've only met him four times. So they really
wow.
do. You can actually, by the time this is said and done, shake
they
hands with
time.
Every voter. Mm-hmm.
I've brought this up on other elections, and I never get the answer I'm looking for, so I'll throw it your way. I don't know that meeting a candidate translates to a vote like it once did. I know there was a time where we were all a little more sheltered as a society, and just the mere fact that you were in the same room where you got to meet one of the candidates, you go, I got to vote for that guy or that girl. I met him. I shook hands with him. Does that still work?
I don't know that it translates directly, but yeah, retail politics is still a strong factor in who
is
people
it?
Vote for, shaking hands, looking them in the eyes,
you
seeing
make
their
a
body
connection.
Language. You connect. So it is really important.
But would you be swayed? Let's say you were on the fence between two or three different candidates, and all of a sudden you were in the same room as one of them. Would that mean to you, I should vote for that guy, that girl? We were in the same room together.
Not necessarily that I would, but if they didn't do well in the room, then maybe I would go with the other person.
Yeah.
So I do. I think it does make a big difference.
And if you're torn between candidates and you met someone and they were nice to you,
yeah,
I'm sorry, you're going to remember that.
Yeah,
right. I mean, at one of the last times Hillary Clinton was in New Hampshire, this was several weeks ago. It was on C-SPAN, which just, rolls tape. And she stood in a crowd of people for about 2 hours after an event. And I honestly, I think she took a picture with every single
That's
one
impressive.
Of them. So, I mean, I could never do that.
That is
impressive.
I don't
like crowds, but she did, and it matters.
Is she worried now?
She better be.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I can use this verb, but remember what Trump said Obama did, you know, Obama schlonged her.
Yeah.
I think she's worried about that with Bernie Sanders. I mean, he is going to be so strong in New Hampshire, and I think she has to prepare for a loss there and then get ready for South Carolina and Super Tuesday and just not lose too badly.
But I understand that this is a game, but if you would have seen her speech or heard her speech, it was all extremely positive, and if she was worried, there was little to no evidence of it during her speech at the end last night.
There wasn't.
Show weakness.
You can't show weakness, but I mean, can we even say she won? She barely won. I mean, that was a tie.
Young voters overwhelmingly backed Sanders.
70% is what they were saying early
with
this
more
morning.
Than 8 in 10 caucus goers under the age of 30 backing the Vermont senator.
Oh, so 8 in 10 is 80%. That's even more.
Clinton won the majority of voters over the age of 45.
Right, but we're talking about voters now in New Hampshire who probably are more of the mentality of the younger voter. But in New Hampshire, because they're so liberal and they love Bernie Sanders talking about giving away free stuff. We're going to have free college. We're going to have free health care.
But how's he going to do that?
Well, he can't. And that's why, I mean, his whole campaign to me is it's just surprising that he's done so well, because we are $18, $19 trillion in debt. We cannot afford all of these programs, even when he talks about taxing the rich. And it's never going to be enough money.
He's
going to
borrow
offering.
It from Trump. That is how we solve
well,
it.
Well, Trump is going to start a farm in Iowa. And I was trying to think, what would his crop be? Maybe it would be like money trees.
Toupees.
Or
toupees. Oh, that's not even a toupee, though. That's what's
no,
sad.
No, that's real.
I wish it was.
Yeah. No, it's his real hair. I mean, I just want to see him on a windy day sometimes. We can really get a sense of
he'll go airborne.
What's going on up there.
Let's take a quick break. Kristen McQueary is here of the Chicago Tribune. If you want to jump in with any questions or comments, 312-981-7200 will get that done. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about last night's caucuses in Iowa with Kristen McQueary of the Chicago Tribune. I read this story today, Kristen, and this comes out every time any of these elections come out. Jeb Bush didn't fare very well yesterday. He had 5,238 votes, which they tabulated and figured out that that meant that he and his campaign spent $2,800 per vote in the state of Iowa. And he's not the only one. I mean, he spent more than Kasich did and Christie did or Santorum did or Huckabee did. But the mere fact that in just one state, one out of the 50 states, just one out of all those candidates spent $2,800 per vote. I mean, I know they always talk about voter reform, election reform, but that's sickening.
It is. It's obscene, the amount of money that we spend on campaigns. It really is. I mean, even locally, like the mayor's race was $7 or $8 million. Can you imagine what some of these social service agencies right now that are so hurting could do with that kind of money?
Well, that's the thing, is they keep stopping programs, very, very important programs. All these politicians do it. But then when it comes down to their own elections, the sky's the limit. Spend whatever you can.
I've always had an idea that I think we should tax their campaign funds.
That's a good idea.
I mean, it takes state resources to police them, to monitor them, to send them letters. They have to fill out all these. Let's throw a tax on them.
How about a matching fund where you say, I spend this much on the campaign, I have to equal that amount to worthwhile causes? I know that that's a great term. It could mean anything, but all that money. I mean, look at Chris Christie, got 3,284 votes. That's only 3,284 more than I got, and I wasn't running. I didn't spend anything.
And they did terribly. I mean, Trump did really well last night because he got all of those new voters. I don't know if you watched it, but I still, as much as I hate that Iowa gets the caucuses first and that they've become this state where they get, you know, as a political junkie, I want the caucuses.
Yeah.
But they really do come out and stand in gyms. It would be like going to the airport, you know, but not taking a trip somewhere, just standing in long lines and waiting. And you have to admire the fact that, you know, they go to that. That's how the caucuses work.
Right.
And the weather forecasted did not prevent people from showing up.
It didn't. And so Trump got, you can same day register in Iowa. You can register right before you vote. You can here too. And those were all Trump people. So, I mean, he did motivate people to come out.
I've also heard many people make note of the fact that every 4 years, younger voters keep saying, hey, we got to do something. We got to get out there and we got to vote. But they show the numbers really had an increase until last night where young voter, the numbers were really, really up. So I guess that's good news. It's good news for Bernie Sanders anyway.
Well, it's good news. Yeah, I guess I was listening to the 20-something voters and they're just not that well informed. But we don't have to get into that.
Yeah.
It's all because of Sticker Kid. That's why people were out there because he was dancing behind. No, he didn't. He helped get the youngsters out there to vote. I want to be like Sticker Kid behind the Clintons.
Do you know who we're referring to?
No, I don't.
This was during Hillary Clinton's speech last night. He stood behind her, and he was dancing and coughing, and he had stickers all over his face, and he got a lot of attention.
Really?
And we're trying
to get him. See, I was just glued to Bill Clinton the whole time.
Yeah.
He looks good.
He does look. I mean, I don't know. How old is he now? He looks pretty good.
Upper 60s? Wouldn't he be in upper 60s, right?
How old's Hillary?
She's in her upper mid-60s. I think she's 67.
Yeah.
I think she's 67.
She looks good for 67.
She does. She does. And she did well last night at her speech. I would like to see, you know, can we get a little humor? Can we get a little something out of her that isn't so messaged? Nope.
I didn't see much of it last night.
No.
I know she's got it in her because I've seen her on shows like Ellen and stuff where she comes out and she's very charming. I've seen her on with Letterman. She can be funny. It just didn't happen last
night.
This
is a serious thing for her.
Yeah.
And in a weird way, that might hurt her.
Right. I mean, she got criticized during one of the debates. You know, they took like a bathroom break and she made a joke about how it takes her a little longer. And I thought it was cute. And it's true. She apparently was running on stage, you know, seconds before they went back live. And she got criticized even for that little slice of, yes, I am a human being.
Right.
So you can't blame her, I guess, for zippering up and just not letting us see, you know, her true self.
Last night, two of the candidates, you had Martin O'Malley for the Democrats.
Oh, goodness.
He has decided to suspend his campaign. We also had Mike Huckabee for the Republicans. Now, the word suspended bothers me because when a candidate says that they've suspended the campaign, that word tends to believe that at some point they'll bring it back. But that never happens. When anyone suspends a presidential campaign, they're done. They're finished, right?
They're done.
Yeah. What are we losing in either of those guys? I hate to say it, but neither of those guys really had any momentum. They didn't stand much of a chance. This isn't a huge factor in losing either of them, is it?
No. I mean, I think O'Malley was kind of a placeholder in case something really rotten happened with Hillary Clinton, if the FBI or she got indicted or something, they had someone kind of standing in. But even at the caucus last night, I don't know if you saw pictures, but he had, you know, a giant gymnasium where his caucus goers were supposed to be, and there were like four
people.
It was empty. So yeah, he's done.
And it's weird because he looks the part of a president. He looks like if you were drawn up a guy, the way he moves, the way he talks, it's kind of Martin O'Malley, but for some reason people just weren't buying it.
No, he never had any sort of momentum. Never.
We go live to the newsroom right now. Kim Gordon has the numbers to find out who won last night.
Yeah, guys, this just in. It appears that Hillary Clinton has inched out Bernie Sanders in Iowa. The official totals are now 100% counted. Clinton, 700.59. Sanders, 696.82.
That is way closer than anyone anticipated, especially Hillary.
Wow. I mean, it's just such a reminder, though, like every vote does count. Everybody at those caucuses does count.
Thank you, Kim.
Can you imagine if you were a diehard Bernie Sanders person and you didn't make it out last night? Had you could have, you know,
he could have changed it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what does he do now knowing this? I mean, it was as neck and neck can be. What's going on now at his campaign headquarters to inch him along and make him go ahead of Hillary Clinton, do you think?
I think they're probably feeling really good about New Hampshire, and he might actually get a breather by any sense. But, I mean, he was pretty exhausted. I don't know if you heard him last night, but he's really hoarse. He can barely speak. They're going in strong to New Hampshire. But then they're going to start hitting South Carolina, Super Tuesday. They're going to start going up against some more conservative Democrat states.
Yeah.
And I just don't know that his policies are going to be popular. I think Hillary Clinton is going to do much better after.
I hate to say this, too. I don't mean to sound ageist in any way, but this was only one state out of the 50, and he's already kind of winded. He's an older guy. Is he going to make it all the way through this?
He's not winded.
He sounded pretty bad last night.
I don't think we're going to have like a Weekend at Bernie's situation. But
now that would be a good president.
Weekend at Bernie Sanders.
Somebody who's they're just stuffed shirts anyway, right?
Right.
No, I mean, I think he'll be fine, but I can't see him doing well in South Carolina or in any of those Super Tuesday states.
Boy, I wish Joe Biden would have run.
Oh, how fun would that be?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the gaffes at this point would have just been countless.
There would have been a lot of laughter on his side, too.
Right.
He's a valuable commodity to the Democrats at this point. His endorsement could really make a big difference, right? If he, for some reason, he said, you know what, I'm a Bernie Sanders guy, that would be a crushing blow to Hillary Clinton and her campaign, wouldn't it?
Oh, sure. I mean, he was, I think, pretty close to running, you know, if not for the death of his son.
Yeah.
And some people still think, you know, there's still a chance before you actually get to the Democratic convention over the summer that, you know, someone else could emerge.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't think he's going to jump in.
Should I do it?
Do it.
You want me to do it? I got almost as many votes as Chris Christie last night. He just edged me up by 3,000 votes. It's not a lot. Kristen, thank you very much. We appreciate you being here. It's Kristen McQuarrie. Read her in the Tribune. A quick break and then news next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Thank you, Kim. Hi, everybody. It's us again, Bill and Wendy. It's part two of our show. 312-981-7200 is the number if you want to talk to us, if you want to question anything we've said. The line starts right over there.
Yeah, don't say that.
Goes way down Michigan Avenue, all the way into Indiana. The Super Bowl is a phrase I'm not allowed to say. So the big game is on Sunday, and you will be watching, I'm guessing, right? Are you going to watch?
I guess.
You're not sure?
We have not been invited to the Super Bowl party we're usually invited to.
Oh, what happened there, do you think?
I don't know.
That's
a
weird
thing. I just realized
that
now.
Because that's an annual event, right? Your friends have a big Super Bowl party, and I guess this year you guys didn't make the cut. Maybe they'll do what they did with the debates, and they'll have a second, like a kids' table party, and you can sit there with Carly Fiorina and Rick Santorum.
I always sat at the kids' table at the party. I will be watching. I want to see my good buddy Cal.
Cal.
Cam. What's his name?
Cam Newton. All right.
Yes, my good buddy.
All right. That just washed out the good buddy part of it. The matchup is really interesting, not just from a team standpoint, but from a quarterback standpoint.
Yes.
Because you have Peyton Manning, who's been, in my opinion, one of the best quarterbacks of all time. And then you have Cam Newton, who's a young upstart quarterback who really should give him a run for his money. Everybody's favoring them over Denver. Now, word comes, and you're seeing it as I'm seeing it, a lot of people believe this will be the last game for Peyton Manning, that he will call a retirement after the game, which is a very possible scenario. He's been a little bit injured. He lost his starting role for the first time in his whole NFL career earlier. They pulled him for a little bit. He was going to be a second stringer. So this might be the game he goes out on, and what better place to go out than on a Super Bowl game?
And Super Bowl 50.
Yeah.
This is really the time to bail.
You know, the thing about him, and other quarterbacks do it, but nobody does it better than he does it, is he reads the defense. Like, he goes up to the line with a play, and then I've seen him do it countless, countless times as he's shouting Omaha, much to the delight of the people in Nebraska, is he quickly makes changes, you know, based on what he's seeing. And I know, like I said, other quarterbacks do it, but he just seems to have this knack for figuring out who's going where and what his best route is, and then making a success out of it all.
He is pretty amazing, and he was pretty good on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Well, he's a great – I mean, he does more commercials. I don't know anybody in sports that does more commercials than Peyton Manning. He's really good in them.
He is.
Isn't he? I've always thought he's a great spokesperson for almost every product he's ever endorsed. Now, if there's a knock on him, there's a knock that he may be juicing up. That's a story that came and went in record time. Al Jazeera had this study, and they said...
Terrorists.
Well, Al Jazeera's not terrorists.
I know.
They said that he was one of the athletes. They named a bunch of names, and he was at the front of that list.
I don't believe Mike that Tyson. For a minute.
Well, it gets a little sticky, because if you followed the story, he kind of said he was getting this package delivered that had... some substances that are not allowed by the NFL, but he maintains that they were being used by his wife. So I find that a little hard to believe.
Well, did anyone ask his wife?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember how exactly
that
went down.
I don't really remember this.
Yeah, he insisted that they were ordered by his wife and used by his wife, and he had nothing to do with those substances. I hope that's true. Now, I have to admit, as big of a fan as I am of his, and I am, I think he's, like I said, if not the best quarterback in the history of the NFL, way, way up there. I found that a little bit disconcerting. And I would throw my wife under the bus, too, in that same exact instant. I will someday.
HGH, which is the human growth hormone.
Right.
Is that, Al Jazeera investigative report linking Peyton Manning to the use of human growth hormone, according to the Huffington Post. This was dated December, the day after Christmas.
Right.
Boy, I never heard this.
Oh, yeah.
The Huffington Post received an advanced screening of a documentary named The Dark Side, which premiered. According to its story, a pharmacist named Charlie Sly.
Aptly named Charlie Sly.
I'm getting a new pharmacist if that's his name. It's like a stage name. Claims drugs were sent to the Mannings all the time, addressed to Peyton's wife, Ashley, while Peyton Manning was recuperating from neck surgery in 2011. Manning missed that entire season, was released by the Colts the following spring.
So the timing of it is a little suspect, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's missing with neck injuries. And neck injuries, by the way, I'm trying to remember who I saw on ESPN explaining that... The type of injury he had to his neck wasn't the kind of thing that you bounce back from immediately. And he bounced back.
Well, you could be paralyzed with neck surgery and healing.
But that this is a particular drug that would help in the healing process.
Here's the quote. This is what Charlie Sly says.
Charlie Sly's behind this?
All the time we would be sending Ashley Manning drugs. Like growth hormone all the time, everywhere, Florida, and it would never be under Peyton's name. It would always be under her name. But according to an ESPN report, Sly said that he recanted his story to Al Jazeera when he realized that it had used information he had made up to Liam Collins, a British hurdler and the undercover reporter who he says was trying to get into the supplementation business. Sly.
Very sly. But what was amazing about this, I mean, the timing was interesting because it was right around Christmas, so that's kind of downtime. But I remember him being interviewed on one of the NFL Sunday shows, denying it vehemently. No, my wife needed it. It had nothing to do with me. She ordered stuff. She used it. I don't know what it was. I had no part of this. But the story went away in, like I said, record time. And you would think if one of your marquee players in the NFL, and Peyton Manning is, if he's involved in something like this, this is the kind of thing. Look at Tom Brady with the Deflategate. Yeah. That went on for months. So this story is as damning, if not more.
Except that the guy recanted his story. So then all of a sudden there's no story. And Peyton Manning's quote on this, the allegation that I would do something like that is complete garbage and is totally made up. It never happened. Never. I really can't believe somebody would put something like this on the air. Whoever said this is making stuff up.
But didn't it, even with that said, didn't it fall away very quickly?
I didn't even hear about it.
That's what I mean.
I was busy with the holidays.
Sure.
But his friends are saying that this could be his last game. Citing his season-long mantra of taking it one game at a time, Peyton Manning responded to the latest wave of retirement rumors on Monday with the verbal equivalent of a shrug of the shoulders.
Yeah.
He said, I haven't made up my mind, but I don't see myself knowing that until after the season, like I said earlier. Whatever cliche you want to use, but I kind of stay in the moment and focus on the task at hand.
Wouldn't you be more apt if you were him? If they won the game, you say to yourself, that's a nice end to the story. I played my last game, Super Bowl 50. I won. I can lay down now. But if you lose the game, don't you go, I wouldn't mind another chance at this.
Well, last week, and I heard this audio, I don't know if we have it, while the idea of him calling it quits at the end of this year has long seemed a possibility, his post-AFC championship game words to Bill Belichick, quote, this might be my last rodeo.
Oh.
It brought the rumors to a fever pitch just over a week ago, and despite Manning's reluctance to say either way in front of reporters or fans, NFL Network's Ian Rapoport claims that the all-time great QB has already kind of let the cat out of the bag a little bit for those in the inner circle.
He has been extremely beat up. I mean, I watched him, especially in the last game, and he won the last game, but it didn't seem like him. I mean, he's got a way of playing, and it just wasn't there. And I think it's the wear and tear, you know, of the season of the career.
18th NFL season in the middle of it. The wear and tear, like Bill said, of his long tenure was apparent in his play for much of the 2015 campaign.
Yeah.
39-year-old quarterback even ended up having to miss a spate of games throughout November and December as he dealt with a pair of lingering injuries. He's only 39?
Yeah.
He looks older.
Yeah, I imagine having guys that big knock you down over and over takes its toll on your look.
Absolutely.
Right? And then there's plenty of other guys. I'll use Brett Favre as an example. there's guys who hang on a season or two too long, and I don't think he wants to be one of those guys.
Go out on top.
Yeah.
He's got money with all his endorsements.
He's done okay for himself.
Isn't it time to give your body a break?
Yeah,
I would imagine. At 39, man. Right. But really.
Yeah. He's been a great career.
And he's lucky he can walk. Look at poor OB.
I know.
Jeez.
All right, we'll take a quick break. It's us. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, we'd be thrilled to hear from you. More show coming your way next, Bill and Wendy, WGN. With Chicago Tribune Sports Plus, you can relive the best moments of the game anytime you want. Start with a 30-day trial at chicagotribune.com/sportsplus. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy, and it's the second half of our show. We're thrilled that you're here. Later on in the show, we'll talk about O.J. Simpson. The big miniseries starts tonight, and we'll explain that. I have another football-related thing. This is very, very quick, but I wanted to share it with you. It's become kind of a thing where when you die now in your obituary, you can put a little personal message in there, not just your accomplishments and achievements and who you're related to, but remember there was a story about a month ago about somebody who in their obituary, they took a shot at Donald Trump saying, you know, do what you want to do, but if I were you, I wouldn't vote for Donald Trump. And that was in their obituary. Listen to this. This is out of Northbrook. A Northbrook woman and a Bears fan took a parting shot at quarterback Jay Cutler in her obituary. Elizabeth Porter Bauman of North Suburban Northbrook died on January 9th, according to the Tribune obituary. The 78-year-old woman was a loyal, intelligent woman, had integrity, all this according to the obituary. She was also not a fan of Jay Cutler's. Here's what it said. This is a direct quote from her obit. She was a woman of loyalty, integrity, opinion, curiosity, and intelligence, a lifelong fan of the Cubs, Blackhawks, and Bears. And then in brackets, except Jay Cutler. Bauman's dislike. By the way, I'm going to have paragraphs and paragraphs of stuff because it's your last chance to get it off your chest.
You have to pay by the word.
I know you have to pay by the word.
You're
but
cheap.
I've set money aside. I've been saving up for this. Bauman's dislike of Jay Cutler was a running joke in the family, and said her son Bill. Even toward the end of her life, family members would joke about Cutler. It was Bill's sister Susan who included the jibe in her mother's obituary. I think she, as a fan, wanted them to have greater success than she thought Mr. Cutler would help them achieve, said Bill Bauman. That's a beautiful way of saying that right to the end, that team and that guy was a disappointment to his mom.
Would you waste your obituary doing a slam to Jay Cutler?
It's your last chance. I mean, he doesn't care. What does Jay Cutler care? He doesn't care.
He's probably flattered. Hey, I got to mention.
No.
Press is press, honey.
I'm in the obituary. That's good news. But I mean, other than your gravestone itself, it's your last chance. If you got something you want to say, this is it. Say it now or never.
How much have you saved?
Oh, I got a lot. Because I got a lot to say at the end.
He'll turn you around. He will. This season is coming.
Do you remember... Remember the crash that Sully Sullenberger saved all those people? And there was a big story out about all these people who at the last minute took out their phones, their cell phones, and they called people, you know, just to say, hey, it looks like I might not make it. I just want to tell you how much you mean to me, how much I love you.
What a terrible call to receive. Oh, what do you do?
I don't know.
The receiver of that call has it worse. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I know they will continue
to
live.
They'll continue, so...
But to be helpless like that...
Yeah, I can't imagine what you would go through. I guess the first inclination is you'd think that person was kidding, right? You'd go, well, no one's going to call me. They've got like a couple of minutes left.
And Terry have a very weird kind of sense of humor. So you might think that Terry was kidding.
I would think she was joking.
I would not think someone was kidding.
You would believe it.
Yes. Why would they call?
I'm going to call you every flight that I'm ever on.
I'm not answering. Bill left. I'm not answering.
But I thought that time, I know this will sound cruel, and it is cruel, but I think that time is better spent calling somebody, not that you love, because they know that you love them, but call somebody that you have a beef with and just go, hey, I'll see you in hell, and hang up. I think that's a more effective use of your time.
You are one vindictive guy. You've heard of Vin Diesel? You are vindictive.
Vin Diesel's brother, vindictive.
I can't believe that.
There's not somebody that you'd want to call at the end and go, hey, this is my last chance to tell you, but you're a horrible person, an awful human being.
No.
I won't be here anymore. Enjoy.
Why would you waste your last breath on someone you hate?
Because they would know that I meant it. Like, my wife would think I was kidding. She would laugh. She'd go, "Oh, come on, you're not, your plane's not about to perish." And she would hang up. She'd be sure it was a joke.
I got to tell you, I don't hate anyone enough to want to do that. You keep
What's your motto?
What
do you say every single day of your
people.
Life? You say, "I hate people."
But I don't.
Every single
I just
day.
Say that when I'm frustrated with people, which is on a daily basis.
I've known you for 20 some odd years. I don't remember a day where you've not said the words, "I hate people."
But look at me. Do I really? I mean, you can say what you want, because I don't. I talk to anyone who will listen to me. I try to be very nice to everyone, and I don't hang on to bitterness where I'm going to call somebody when my plane is going down to go, "You're a jerk." Plus, I don't know their number. You have Jay Cutler's number?
I wouldn't waste it on Jay Cutler.
You have more than one person?
I got a whole file. Hold on a second.
Oh, my God. Honest to God, there is not one person I can think of that I would say that to.
Nobody in your whole life? There's not one single person that you've had a terrible, terrible situation with, and you go, "This is my last chance to tell them. I can't stand them. I have to do it now."
No.
Really?
I don't think a lot of people have a list of people.
I don't have a long list, but there's three or four people.
I don't think
there's three
one.
Or four people that I would go, "This is my last chance to let them know. I got to let them know now or never."
You are an interesting cat.
Is there a definite number one on your list?
He died a couple of years. He died a year ago.
Well, then who is it if they're dead?
No, that's too cruel to say, isn't it? He used to work here. He was one of the bosses here.
Oh.
Matheny, evil Matheny. He would have been the first guy I would have called in a situation.
You
like
honestly would have taken effort to call someone on your deathbed to say, "You know
death
what?
Plane.
I hate you."
On my death plane. No. Seriously, no. I'd be so busy screaming and crying as the plane was
true.
About to crash, I wouldn't have the wherewithal to make that phone call.
You couldn't dial through the tears.
No, probably not.
I don't think I have one person that I would call
There's
to say.
There's no one in your whole life that you just out and out can't stand,
well,
that you don't want them on the planet?
Oh, they can share the planet. Honestly, I really am
You're
thinking
making
about
yourself
this.
Out to be a way sweeter human being than you are.
I
you,
swear to God.
Every day you say, "I hate people,
but
I hate people,
just
I hate
a
people."
Saying. That's when I'm annoyed with people. But I genuinely like people.
Right.
I am a total people person.
All right.
It's just, there's no one that I hate that much.
Everyone has somebody they hate.
I don't really.
Everyone. You don't.
There are people that I think are jerks, but yeah. I mean, I don't. I just try not to think about them.
All right.
You carry a lot bottled inside.
But you're
of
lying. Because I talk to you every day, and every day there's somebody on your list that you can't stand. You wouldn't take that minute to call them at the end and go, "Just for the record, you and I hate you." You wouldn't do that?
No.
All right.
I swear to God. I swear on my parents' grave.
All right.
I'm not kidding. You have to tell me who you think it is off the air, because now I'm curious. And
it
I'll
changes
come back and tell
every
you.
Day with you, but there's always you always
well,
have somebody.
No one I hate that much. I mean, when I just say, "Oh, I hate people," it's because somebody cut me off in the revolving doors or something. I use that as a blanket statement.
All right.
I don't have that much
in place
hatred.
Of love.
Right.
I don't love people. I hate people.
People are annoying sometimes, but there's no one that takes the top of the list.
All right.
God, now I got to think about this. You might know somebody. That I don't know that I hate.
A quick break. Some news. More show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
A little shout out to Mantino.
How about it?
That was subtle, Steve. Well played.
It's on my list.
Well played.
I just choose one that's on the list.
Sure.
Got Evergreen Park here.
Oh, yeah. They all come up. Is Steve Dale on tomorrow? He is. Noted pet expert Steve Dale will be joining us tomorrow to talk about the world of animals. And there's a story that I wanted to run past Steve Dale, but can I run it past you first?
Sure. I'm an animal lover.
There's a woman in Norway, a young woman, she's 20 years old, who believes that she is a cat. Which you would, I think that's one of those things you would either know you were or you weren't. It's pretty easy to prove that you are or are not a cat. There's a video of her.
Did you see the X-Files last night, by the way?
No, I DVR'd it.
Is Steve Dale on it?
No.
Is there a similar storyline on X-Files?
Vaguely.
Just a little? A video of a woman in Norway, and it says a human woman, and I saw the video. She's a human woman. We play
what
you.
What other kind of women are there?
They're, oh, You wouldn't believe.
There's the witchy woman.
You would not believe.
Right?
Women come in many flavors, Wendy. It's not just human. I would play a little bit of the clip
what
for you.
What has happened to you today?
But it's she's
you're
all
a sexual dynamo, and you hate people.
I don't He's going to put people. Your name on the list. Be careful.
Right. I don't hate people. I hate four people. Three now. One of them's dead. And I'm going to get to the other three. Got that list in my wallet. A video of a human woman in Norway who claims that she is really a cat has taken the internet by storm, and that's hard to do. You know that. Here's what it says. The woman is identified in the video as a 20-year-old woman, and her name is Nano, N-A-N-O. I don't know if that, is that a common name in Norway? I don't know. here's the questions that they pose to Nano, the woman who thinks she's a cat. Now, they're trying to prove, just by virtue of this video, they're trying to prove to her, because I know she's not a cat. I saw the video. She's a woman who thinks she's a cat. So they say, here are some things that they can prove that she is not a cat.
All right.
But mine is that she's a human. Number one, she is giving the interview. It says, not to promote stereotypes here, but cats can be trained. But when was the last time you saw a cat really do anything, all in caps, much less sit down for a lengthy interview? Cats have better things to do than to be interviewed.
I don't know, Bill. I talk to my cat quite a bit.
Cat will just sit there while you talk to the cat?
But your cat does not talk
Sometimes
back.
Sometimes I follow him around. He'll meow back.
In interview style, like you're asking the probing questions and your cat's responding?
Well, I mean,
like,
it depends on the question. If I get too personal, he's not going to answer.
Yeah, all right.
All right, but is she meowing in the video?
Yeah, she's making weird cat noises. I mean, she talks a little bit too, which again, you're one or the other. You're not a human and a cat. You got to go with one or the other. Number two, this is them trying to disprove her theory that she is a cat. She and her friend, who allegedly adopts a cat personality sometimes, communicate through a series of meows. That's one of the weirder parts of the video. Like, I can't make out what she's saying because I don't speak Norwegian, but the rest of it is her making these weird meowy noises. It says, adult cats don't usually meow at each other. They primarily use meows to communicate with humans. Is that true?
No.
I haven't been around cats.
That's not true, Kevin. It is?
It is true?
I believe so. In fact, I remember Steve Dale himself making that point that cats will like use more so body language and things to communicate with each other.
But when talking to humans, they somehow...
Maybe she is a cat.
She's not a cat, Bill. She's a lady.
There's a cat joke here
She's
somewhere.
A lady dressed like a cat. I've seen both. I've seen humans and I've seen cats. This is a lady pretending to be a cat. For insurance purposes.
That was a great James Taylor song.
Was that a great one?
I've seen humans.
I've seen cats. Also, what she said / meowed actually means delicious tuna and not come on,
See
let's go,
saying?
As she believes. She makes a bunch of meowy noises and then it says there's captions underneath. I think they're messing with us on that one. The whole cat vision thing. She claims, Nano from Norway, claims to have superior night vision when she's a cat, but this doesn't really fit with her cat born into a human body story. Oh, I left that part out. She maintains that she was born with a human body, but she understands that it was a mistake, that she should have been born in a cat body.
What'd you have for lunch?
Alphabets.
Does she use the human bathroom or a litter box?
Oh, it doesn't say, but that's a solid question.
Because that's the question I'd ask.
That is a solid question.
Or
says,
liquid.
Or liquid, depending on. It says, your eyes are part of your body, so Nano should still have human vision. Here's another argument that they're making to prove that she is not a cat. She says that she hasn't caught any mice, but they say that a cat would never admit to this. You get kicked out of the cat club if you don't catch
mice. You know, that one is pretty compelling to me.
The mice?
They're pretty proud animals, so I don't think they would give that out.
Is that all, like, if you have an indoor cat, and I don't know if your cat is one that you let outside
no,
from
he
time
stays
to time,
in.
Stays in, can you tell that there's a nervousness that they want to go out and catch things, or does that not even come up?
I don't know that he wants to go out and catch things, but if we're, like, out on our back deck, he'll want to be out there for sure. But then, like, a car will drive by and he gets freaked out.
Oh.
I had one cat, Declan, the only cat I ever had, and any time the door was opened, he would be so fretful. He
just
would
to
be
past the border.
Yeah,
of...
he stayed away from that. He did not want to be outside at all.
Because why? Any ideas? Just
he was
fear
always
of the
an
unknown?
Inside. Yeah, I mean, he was an inside cat.
So how do people determine? I've never had one. How do people determine if their cat is what they call an inside cat or an outside cat? Is that easy to figure out?
In my opinion, and everybody's opinion may vary, cats should always be indoor creatures because when they're outside, they kill things.
And bring it back,
yes.
Right? Yeah.
And they can get dirty or hurt or think about their rummaging around in the gutters and stuff, and then they come and sleep in your bed.
Yeah.
That's the main reason why Declan was an indoor cat.
Wow.
And he was declawed.
Oh.
I didn't do it, but I got him at a shelter. So if they're outside without claws,
they don't survive well.
Yeah, they can't defend themselves. Kevin, would you agree being a current cat owner?
Yes.
Kevin went in, brought his cat, and he got declawed at the same time, Kevin and the cat. Saved $8, he said. How about this one? This is the last one. It said, they're trying to disprove that this lady, Nano, is a cat. She's wearing a bell. What self-respecting cat is ever going to wear a bell by choice? Also, that might explain why she hasn't caught any mice. And that's true. If you're a cat with a bell on, a mouse is going to hear it and avoid you at all costs.
This is the most logical argument. I mean, they got her. It's true. They got her.
I would have thought that just you're shaped like a human being. You're not shaped like a cat, so you're not a cat. But I love the fact
that you
she's
that.
Fighting them on this. Oh, no, I'm a cat. All right. All right, a quick break and then more show. We're 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Call us, text us, stop by. We're at 312-981-7200.
All right, on the heels of the Iowa caucus that went on last night, Bernie Sanders surprised a lot of people, especially Hillary.
Yeah.
I think Kim gave the numbers, and Steve Bertrand may have them. There was a very Hillary won by a very slight margin. It was like 750 to 600 and something.
I can't read my own writing. Yeah, it was
pretty close.
It was amazingly close. I have these two numbers written down: 700.57 and 699.82. I don't know what those numbers mean, but I do know that they were said.
I just completely spit.
So
on the
think about those two numbers, would you? Huh?
I just did a spit take with nothing in my mouth.
Uncle Tanoose is coming for a visit.
What's that from?
Danny Thomas Show.
Oh, yeah, that is it.
Master of the Spit Take.
All right, well, I have some...
Wait, do you just know the series and you just had the title of the episode there?
No, it was a running theme on the Danny Thomas Show that from time to time his Uncle Tanoose was coming for a visit, and every time he found that out, he'd be drinking something and would do a spit take. You're welcome.
Bernie Sanders is a smart man, and he's wooing the younger voters. And he closed out the Iowa caucus speech with David Bowie's Starman.
Nice.
I know. Many musicians and millennial endorsed presidential candidates closing their Iowa caucus speech. David Bowie's Starman will change your mind. According to Pitchfork, Sanders has been incorporating the song into his public appearances leading up to the caucus, though the star man himself was avowedly apolitical. We like to think that he might have approved. Do you think he would have approved?
David Bowie just passed away.
I mean,
yeah.
His camp's not going to get on Bernie Sanders right away and say, stop using star man.
But doesn't it depend on if that particular performer is a fan of the politicians? Like, he's been using the song America from Simon and Garfunkel. That's been his theme for the last couple of weeks. So at some point...
Garfunkel.
Don't they have to...
Which one?
Don't they have to check in with somebody and say, hey, we want to use... We've got this whole ad campaign based on this song.
Absolutely. They have to get permission.
Well, for the ad, they do. I don't know if they do have to play it at a rally.
But to run the commercial itself with that song, America,
they said they signed off on it.
They did.
Yeah.
So you would only do that if you were Simon and or Garfunkel. You would only do that if you believed in the message that he was trying to sell, wouldn't you?
Or if you wanted the big fat check.
How much of the big fat check do you get if it's played at a rally? Garfunkel's just happy somebody's saying Garfunkel.
No. We're not talking. I don't think you have to pay at a rally. But I'm saying we're talking about the television commercial. You know, look for America, the TV commercial.
Yeah.
Well, David Bowie, I don't know if he was a Bernie Sanders fan. Starman was avowedly apolitical.
Yeah.
He didn't pick a party.
Right.
Because Adele is complaining. Whose song is someone? Adele is.
Is Rubio using Adele's song or is Cruz using it? One of the two of them.
She wants out. She said no more.
Yeah.
Adele joins long list of artists who've told campaigns to change their tunes. Come on, click on the story.
How come nobody's using Alvin and the Chipmunk music as their background? That's what I would use.
That's why you're not
running.
That's
a sure path to the White House.
Yeah, Adele has not given Donald Trump permission to use her songs, although he doesn't care. He's going to still do it.
I think so, yeah.
Rolling in the Deep he used.
Oh, yeah, right.
After
Sarah
Palin's impassioned speech, and Trump also used the Skyfall theme at an event in Ohio.
Because he's like Bond. He's very similar to James Bond.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then REM, remember somebody used... Here, after Trump blasted Dream On at one of his rallies, Aerosmith frontman Steven Tyler's lawyer sent Trump a cease and desist letter to Trump saying, quote, he did not have our client's permission to use the song. You have to use it. Even,
remember how worked up Jim Peterik, our friend Jim Peterik,
yeah, who was that? Oh, I know who it was.
Was it Carly Fiorina?
No, it was the woman who would not give the gay marriage licenses.
Right.
Lewis.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
When she was released or something, they were playing Eye of the Tiger. Bump, 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 bump.
Kim Davis. Kim Davis.
Yes, thank you. He
Jake Ryan. Was insanely upset with that.
And made him stop. You have to get permission.
Right, right.
And Michael Stipe also released a statement after one of his band songs was used at a Trump rally without his permission. The statement included, go, bad word, that starts with an F. Yourselves.
Which one?
The lot of you.
Which one? Can you say which one?
No.
No.
All right. Jimmy DeCastro is in the studio.
He
are you trying to get me fired?
As soon as you said
I know you've
Jimmy
wanted a solo show.
Like magically,
but,
Jimmy
know,
just appeared.
I have
never seen anything
follow,
like that.
Go swear word yourselves. The lot of you, you sad, attention-grabbing, power-hungry little men. Do not use our music or my voice for your moronic charade
wow,
of a campaign.
That's serious. I know I'm imagining this, but it seemed like when I was a kid, both parties, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, would always play the song Happy Days Are Here Again at an event like this. I can't be remembering that right? There's no way they would both use that song every 4 years. That's the only one I remember from when I was a kid. They would just play, nah, 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 and they all wore straw hats.
Were you born in the 20s?
And Harry Truman would wink at me. All right.
You are a weird cat, I'm telling you.
I'm going to check my glucose levels and we'll be back in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. Our next guest, his first appearance of 2016?
It's 2016, Wendy.
What does our show schedule
you
say?
You can't deny it. Well, on the show schedule, it says 2015.
But don't pay attention to
you
that.
You always round up 1 year.
His first appearance this year, Mike McNamara, is back from the Midwest Independent Film Fest. Hello.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
It's a beautiful day. How are we doing?
And you brought someone with you.
I did. Tonight is our opening night. So the Midwest Independent Film Festival, it's all year round. It's every first Tuesday at Landmark Century Center Cinema over in Lincoln Park. And tonight, we are thrilled to be opening the fest with this incredible documentary. If you're a foodie, if you're not a foodie, if you...
Isn't
just
everyone a foodie now?
I think everyone's kind of a foodie. If you're a foodie at any level, you'll love this film. Or if you like people and humanity.
Oh, that leaves us out.
That leaves you.
Sorry. We were going to see it, but
it's
now,
Mike, we
are not. It's
called For Grace. It's our opening night film. It's been getting rave reviews all over the country. It's made here in Chicago, and I have the co-director, Mark Helanowski, with me.
Hey, Mark. Nice to see you.
Hey, thank you guys for having me.
Co-director, along with somebody who listeners of WGN or readers of the Chicago Tribune will know pretty well, and that's Kevin Pang, the food critic.
Yeah, exactly. So Kevin and I, we worked on this film. We started actually 4 years ago. Just with this little idea of doing a documentary about the super high-end fine dining world.
Yeah.
So this is kind of the world that I think a lot of people don't really know about. For two people to have dinner, it's about $800 to eat at a restaurant
See,
of this caliber.
I can't even fathom that. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, I mean, and it is fascinating, like, how much goes into a restaurant. Then it's the food, it's the ambiance, it's the service. Every little thing about the restaurant is so refined. So Kevin and I, we wanted to look at what it takes to build a restaurant like this. He was a longtime food writer for the Chicago Tribune.
Yeah.
And of course, all your listeners know him here at WGN. And he had heard through the grapevine that Curtis Duffy, who's a 2-Michelin-star chef at Avenues, wanted to open up what he hoped to be the best restaurant in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Curtis, he worked at restaurants like Alinea with Grant Achatz, Charlie Trotter. He worked at some of the best kitchens in the country. So he really had this this background to be able to achieve this goal of his. Kevin heard through the grapevine. Curtis wanted to open up this this restaurant. We said, hey, let's tag along. Let's, you know, figure out what it takes to build this kind of restaurant. And, you know, we filmed for months and months, and there were delays, and we started asking him more and more questions, and we got to build up a relationship with Curtis.
Mm-hmm.
And at a certain, I think about 8 months into it, you know, Curtis opened up to us in a way that he never had before. He opened up about his past and this this tragedy that happened to him back in Ohio, where he's from. So the movie then became, you know, a lot more than just food, a lot more than just how to build a really pretty dish. It's about sacrifice. It's about ambition. It's about family. It's about all these themes that are really, really central to, you know, if you have a dream and you're trying to achieve it, like mm-hmm. what that takes on a personal and a professional level.
I have always wanted to own a restaurant or have my own restaurant. And then anyone I speak to that has it says, even from a little hot dog joint up to a great thing, it's like, be prepared to work 24 hours a day. It's, you're always there. You always have something on your mind about it. And it can take a toll on your family, yourself, and everything else.
Sure. It absolutely does. So coming into this, you know, if we want to, you know, paint this kind of basic picture, Kevin was the food guy.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of the film guy. I didn't really know about this world before coming into this. And as we started asking questions, we started interviewing some of these like top chefs in Chicago. We learned about the toll that it does take. These chefs, these cooks that, you know, are serving these amazing, beautiful plates, you know, it's expensive. So you think they're making tons of money. They're not. All the chefs that are in the back of the house, you know, they have to overstaff in the front of house and the back of house. Those guys are making like $30,000 a year.
That's
putting in
it
putting for, in 16-hour days
for
working
an $800
days a
meal.
And you're at the pinnacle. You're at the best restaurants right. in the country.
So these guys, they all are sacrificing on so many levels of their life. A lot of them are divorced. A lot of them don't have social lives. So it takes a huge, huge toll. So it's a central question of what does it take to be the best in your industry. If you have this dream of excellence, what does it take? What do you have to sacrifice to get there? So that became the central theme of our film.
I'm sure you read the same stories I read. There's this chef in France who sadly just died a day ago, and they were trying to figure out how much of the pressure of running this restaurant contributed to his death. He took his own life, and if you read his story about all the pressure, as you were saying, just from running and maintaining a restaurant of that quality, It does. It eats away at you.
Well, definitely. You know, so the kind of gold standard for restaurants across the world is called the Michelin Guide.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have 3 stars maximum. You know, Curtis had 2 stars when we started filming him. And, you know, then, you know, 1 to 3 stars is really what it is. And there have been stories of people who do take their own life.
Just for not achieving
it's
rating.
The pressure. It's if you drop from 3 to 2 because you have to constantly earn those stars year after year. So, I mean, the pressure, the money, everything, like it really just comes to a head, and it's a very, very high stakes world.
You still want to open your restaurant? The name is great. Do you like the name Wendy's? Don't you think that would sell?
That would be great.
That'd be a pretty good
name. I just
name.
Could see Wendy running a hot dog joint, and within a week, she'd be like, this was a bad idea.
No, I want to have a like bar food, like appetizers, live music, bar kind of thing.
You would be miserable.
Well, see, that's just it.
In a good way.
But that's what I want to ask Mark. Mark Helanowski, co-director of For Grace, which mm-hmm. is the opening night tonight at the Midwest Independent Film Fest. Mike mm-hmm. McNamara is also here as well. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you cover this in For Grace, and I will certainly look for it when I see it. Why do people do this then? Just for the love of what they do?
Yeah, no, exactly. So that was kind of the question that Kevin and I, my co-director, we eventually settled on this question of, really, is it worth it? Is it worth it to, you know, put everything else, like toss it to the side and just focus, have this single-minded focus on this one career objective?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, I think that question is, I mean, it's definitely asked in the film. And I would love for you guys and your viewers to watch the film and see how Curtis answers that question himself, because I think it really comes down to, you know, everybody has their own answer to that question. Is it worth it?
Sometimes, and I've heard other documentaries tell similar stories, you're telling one story and then you realize sometimes earlier on, sometimes later on, there's a different route to take. There's a different path to this story. And you kind of realize that in this case. What do you do behind the scenes to say, hey, I like what we're doing this way, but maybe the better story is this one? How is that handled?
Yeah, so, you know, again, to go back to the beginning, Kevin and I, we thought this film would be about food and about, you know, making a restaurant. And after 6 months, we had this conversation with Curtis, and it's one of the interviews. It's a central interview in the film that, you know, Kevin was asking some questions, and we just kept getting deeper and deeper and deeper. And you see in the film the first time that Curtis really publicly shares this tragedy that happened to him back in his hometown in Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Don't tell him. Don't.
We're not going
to
spoil.
I'm dying to know. That's the hardest thing.
Sitting here with the button. Like, nope. Yeah. Got to come see it. I mean, Four Grays, this film, you're really in the thick of it. You're in that grind to build this restaurant. Not just any restaurant. One of the best restaurants in the world. And then, meanwhile, you're right there as Curtis is trying to pick up the pieces of his life and get his life back together. It's one of the few times I've cried in the theater when I saw it at South by Southwest
A non-Muppet-related movie, we need to specify.
Charlie Brown. There was that right. Charlie Brown one Snoopy was with the circus and then he left the circus.
It was a sad story.
And I was bawling my eyes out. I think I was 5 years old with the TV that had the knob on it. But this... this film is spectacular. And the cool thing is, so if those of you that are outside of Chicago tuning in, it actually also just released all over the country on iTunes today, and is currently in the top 10 for documentaries on iTunes.
Great.
Not
so
bad.
If you can't make it out to the fest tonight, go to fourgracefilm.com or just go to iTunes and look up Four Grace and just buy it. Yeah. Buy. Keep, you know, it's a spectacular film. You're going to want to own it. You're going to watch it again and again. I mean, you're looking beyond just the personal struggles, just the most spectacular plates of food you've ever seen in your life on the big
screen.
It's
beautiful. That trailer we watched, it is gorgeous. The food is beautiful. And Mark, my final question to you is when you're behind the camera and all of a sudden your idea for a foodie type documentary pivots and there's this heartbreaking revelation, which I'm guessing that's what it is, does half of you go, oh, this is great, I got it? And does the other half of you go, oh my God, this is terrible?
Right, so to revisit that moment where we had that interview with Curtis where he opened up with it, you know, I will say, behind the camera, I was literally crying. Literally cried. Kevin and I, after we wrapped that interview, we drove home in silence for a half hour with the weight of what was just shared of us. It was incredible. And then we had to pivot. We went back to Curtis's hometown in Ohio. We got, you know, we talked to, newspaper reporters, police. We got archival news footage. It just became this much bigger thing. And, you know, again, to kind of take it back, this is a food movie. It is, you know, Michelin star food. It's absolutely beautiful.
Right.
The thing though, at the end of the day, Kevin and I, we wanted to make this film for our moms. You know, we want to make this film for general audience.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a foodie to understand this film. You don't have to know who Grant Achatz is or Charlie Trotter. All you have to know is that there's this guy from small town Ohio who has a huge dream, and just watch him, you know, watch him go for it.
Do you have to decide then when something is that kind of unexplained and out of the ordinary and you didn't see it coming, do you have to say to him, hey, I know that was a very emotional thing. You knew there was a camera on. Are you cool with us including that in the movie? Did you have to confront him with that or not?
So, you know, from the beginning of the documentary, we approached this, Kevin and myself, as a piece of journalism. So Curtis had zero editorial control over anything. Kevin and I have final cut. It's not something that we have to, like, run things by.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, you do have that balance where, you know, someone is sharing something so, you know, so personal.
Yeah.
You have to treat that very, very delicately. So, you know, there actually are a few moments in the film that are these, like, really kind of crazy revelations. One happens, like, in the first third, and there's a few moments in the film that really were very, very sensitive.
Right.
And, you know, I think Kevin and myself, it was so important for us to maintain the story, maintain the integrity.
So you didn't even sit down with them and say, hey, what just happened? Would you prefer that not be? And that never even happened. You just said, it's part of the filming process. We're using it.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I mean, we went forward. He shared it with us, and at that point, again, you know, he was very comfortable with us because that was 6 or 8 months into the filming process. So we developed this relationship with him. He trusted us to tell his story. So we're just honored that we are the people that he trusted to share this really, really personal story.
I cannot wait to see For Grace. Co-director Mark Helanowski in the studio and Kevin Pang also in on this project.
They'll both be there tonight, too. Kevin will be there tonight. There will be a Q&A with them after the screening, as well as a little bit of bonus footage. It's going to be a really cool night.
Nice.
And we've got about 10 tickets left until we're completely sold out. So you can go to MidwestFilm.com. and buy tickets. And if you're not able to make it out tonight, go to forgracefilm.com and just buy it. I mean, this is something you're going to want to have.
I'm doing this tonight.
A movie you're going to want to have.
I'm not kidding. Really I good. Have to see this.
You can watch it again and again.
Yeah.
It's spectacular.
Mark Helanowski, go to forgracefilm.com. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
And Mike McNamara, Director of Programming for the Midwest Independent Film Fest. Give us your website there again, sir.
Thanks. MidwestFilm.com. It's going to be a fun one tonight. You can find us on Facebook as well, and we've got a new YouTube page up there as well. You can check out the trailer for Grace on there. And we're going to have a lot of fun tonight, 6 p.m. at Landmark Century Center Cinema.
Outstanding.
Come and join us.
Congratulations on this.
Thank you so much.
We'll take a quick break and then be back in a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy WGN. You found out what the secret was of the movie. How did that happen?
I
crazy internet.
I know. I hate it.
Did you?
I hate people and I hate the internet.
You do. I knew it.
No, I just Googled the guy's name because I wanted to see a little bit more about the chef, and the restaurant is Grace.
Mm-hmm.
And don't do what I did.
You don't want to know the surprise twist in this plot. So don't use your internet until further notice. Everybody stay away from the internet. It's bad for you.
It did that to me for Making a Murderer, too.
Did it?
Yeah, I just was looking for some information, and it blew it for me.
I was surprised in the last Star Wars movie, and I don't need to say spoiler alert because I'm not going to ruin anything, but there's a thing or two that happens that is pretty jarring, and I saw it on opening night, and I said to myself, by the time I get home, the internet will be filled with what I just saw, and honestly, it took about 2 days. So I'm surprised it lasted 2 days, where you couldn't just turn on your computer and go, oh, that happened in Star Wars?
Can I tell you a terrible story?
Yeah.
I don't know how many times my husband, Jimmy Mack, has seen it at this point.
But it's double digits, isn't it?
No, I don't think. I
no?
think we're still under 10, but we're getting close to it.
Yeah.
And the kids have gone, mainly Dylan, my 13-year-old. And Jim and Dylan went to see it at Movie Co. They had it there where the seats were vibrating. It was a special room during it. It was really.
I'm surprised Jimmy came home. I would have just.
You know what?
Would have lived there in the theater.
You
How many
laugh.
Times did he see it that day?
Well,
sometimes it's not even showing. He just sits in the theater.
I don't even know why it went away because he had told some friends, oh my God, you got to go see it there. And they didn't do it again. So I don't know if it was a special. I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
But when they were walking out of the movie, the people waiting to go in the movie, or it was the other way around. Dylan and Jim were waiting to get in the movie. The people walking out, there was a dude who said
he was announcing what happened.
He announced a big thing.
Yeah.
And now had Jim and Dylan not seen it. I know it was weeks into it, but isn't that rude?
It's terrible.
See, now if I can go back to the beginning of the show, it's funny to me that you're crazy angry about that, but not about the sticker kid behind Hillary.
The sticker kid didn't hurt anyone and didn't ruin Hillary Clinton's chances, if anything.
But he cheapened the moment.
Big time. On national TV, this guy just
was
talking
about
Yeah, but
what did he spoil, sticker kid?
His
reputation,
well,
okay.
But if you're
She's trying to rally the troops, build momentum, or put a smiley face on a something that didn't work out her way, and this guy's back there.
For people who don't know what we're referring to, Kevin, is it on our Facebook page already? There was a kid last night, I say kid, he was a college student, who stood behind Hillary Clinton while she was making her speech and was just
being a doofus.
Yeah.
I'll admit that.
Making faces, and he had stickers all over his face, and I don't know what his agenda was. I guess to get people to notice him. It worked.
Yeah, but I can't make the correlation between that and spoiling a pinnacle moment in a movie.
But this was more important. This was a pinnacle moment in an election. This was even bigger.
It's a completely different thing, though.
But it's still somebody like using up somebody else's moment. You know, he went out of his way to say, I know you're Hillary Clinton and I know you're running for president, but I'm here now. You don't see any of that?
No, I don't think what he did was right, and I think he's a doofus, and thank God my kids have not done anything like that.
As far as we know.
Yet.
And I speak for my kids, I meant.
You guys are both really nice. No, yet, but so, as far as you know.
No, but so, but you think that spoiling a Star Wars movie is a greater offense?
I think it's a different offense.
Okay.
I don't see the connection. Honestly,
it's still somebody using up somebody else's moment. That like people ruining the movie.
I'm just waiting in a line. You know, they were just waiting in a line.
But what did like that guy, the Star Wars guy, ruin something? Like all of a sudden, if you're in the moment of that movie, you're watching that movie, and this event or these events take place that you didn't expect to have happen, you go, "Oh wow, yeah. I'm watching a story, and that guy ruined it for me."
I didn't expect this kid to do it. I know Hillary didn't, so you know.
Yeah.
They were surprised. I don't say what the kid did was right. It's not. I'm not even talking about that. It was the wrong thing to do, but yeah. It amuses me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, and everybody's talking about him today.
We've been trying to reach him. Kevin, has there been any luck at all in reaching Peter? I'm trying to remember what his last name was.
Clinkscale.
How can you forget his name?
He has is it Clinkscales? Is that what
yeah,
it is?
Yeah, because the scale will clink if you run
into
it.
Oh, yeah, Peter Clinkscales. Have we been able to reach him at all?
No luck yet.
Nothing
he's
yet.
He's an actor.
Maybe he's napping or sleeping it off. I don't know.
Who has stickers on his face? Someone texted.
Peter Clinkscales. Yes.
He was just a doofus who was a 19-year-old Drake Theater kid who was behind Hillary Clinton as she was giving her speech last night.
He was contorting and...
And it was being a goofus. Goofus doofus.
Yes.
That's his documentary that
will
right
be now
out.
I'm watching a live feed of Bernie Sanders, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And...
Is he there?
No,
because wouldn't that be funny?
In Clinkscale? No, but I guess there was a guy behind him who started to sort of nod off, you know.
Oh, he did.
But he's back now. But, you know, that's like a natural sort of a funny thing-ish. But if the guy was behind there trying, you know, like flipping the bird to the audience or something, that's just inappropriate.
Right.
Hey, that could have been worse if Clinkscales, you know, was doing something like that. That would have been horrible.
That would, but... When you see this, because you haven't seen all the footage yet, right? You didn't see the speech yet. When you see it, he's not flipping off the camera, but he's being so obtrusive. I mean, you can't help but look at this kid.
That was his mission.
I know. But it's almost as bad than if he had just held up his middle finger through the whole time. Because you were just drawn to this guy. That moment is lost because I don't even know. I had to watch it a second time to even realize what she was saying. Because I'm just watching this kid the whole time.
Were
you laughing?
He turned Bill Clinton into Clutch Cargo, as you said.
He did. They cut, CNN cut the feed so you only saw Bill Clinton's, like, his nostrils on down because they didn't want to show this kid anymore. That's the former president. They just cut his head in half on TV.
I still don't understand why security did not ask that kid to leave.
It would have looked terrible. It would have looked so bad.
Because, no, but it would have looked like, you know, someone sent henchmen to get this.
Yeah.
Well, they should have sent henchmen.
Not during
but at the
life.
Time, there was a question. There was for me anyway. I thought this was like a special needs person. I really
like,
did.
He looks like he is.
He's trying to make himself look that way because there's a picture that we saw with him and Bernie Sanders.
Right.
And he's being fine, a goof.
Right.
He was really turning it on. And I'm not saying it's right.
Yeah.
But it made me laugh. I'm sorry.
No, I get it. Well, then his mission was accomplished then. I think he wanted to make
one
person laugh.
He didn't ruin the plot of a Star Wars movie.
No.
I think that's worse.
Ooh, that would have been bad.
That would have been bad.
Ooh.
A break, some news, more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I heard Steve Bertrand mention Blackhawks game tonight. Did any of you guys see any of the All-Star game or the skills contest and everything?
You know, my goal was to have watched it, and it ended up, I was in a car, so I listened to a bunch of it on the radio, but I didn't get to see any of it.
John Scott put together this little blog, this little essay about him being voted into the All-Star game. And
as a captain.
Yeah.
Which was unexpected.
And I don't want to give stuff away, but Kevin, can we post a link to that? It's just a touching thing. I mean, this was kind of a joke because fighting in hockey is not really accepted anymore, and he's kind of a fighting goon who was with the Hawks for a minute, a season and a half or something like that. And so they started an online poll to get him to go to the All-Star game, and it was a joke, and
you got to read this thing. I can't give stuff away. It was this guy has been moved down to the minors, right, if you will, and he was named MVP of the All-Star game. Kaner made a goal, and you see John Scott come up to him, and it really looks for a minute like they're in a fight, but they're just goofing because they're friends from being on the Hawks together. And this guy deserves to be in the NHL in the majors.
Sure. He was the MVP of the All-Star game. That's impressive.
And it just, if you read the little blog post that he put up about when he was told he's going to be transferred, he had just gotten his All-Star gloves. Mm-hmm. It was just a heartbreaking moment for him. And he said he never even wanted to be a fighter.
Right.
He's so tall. Happened. If you see, it was like you'd see him standing as they were lining up. He's huge.
Yeah.
And he wasn't as fast as the other players, but he tried so hard. And then at one point, he got in a scuffle with somebody and he saw how his teammates reacted. And he's like, this might be my mission,
right,
as a teammate here. And it's just really a touching little blog that's up on our Facebook page, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. And this guy has overnight become this huge success now.
Yeah.
From joke to top of the heap.
A lesson to be learned for all of us.
What's the lesson?
I'm not sure, but there's a lesson in there. I'll find out what it is. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We're going to talk about the O.J. Simpson miniseries that's coming up. It starts tonight, a 10-part miniseries. We'll get to that next. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you remember where you were when O.J. Simpson was in Al Collins' car driving down
the slowest chase in the history of chases?
Were we on the air at the Loop at the time? Because I know I was.
I was on vacation in Florida watching it in a restaurant with my wife. We were watching it.
Were you shocked that it was moving so slowly?
Yeah, because your traditional car chase happens very quickly, but that one was like a parallel universe car chase.
We're going to be able to see that on our own television screens tonight. We're going to find out everything we need to know about the People versus O.J. Simpson. On the line with us, ABC News correspondent Jason Nathanson. Hi, Jason.
And just for the record, I was working at a Red Robin at the time.
You were?
Really?
That's the best place to be.
Yes, that was a lot of fun. I was 17, I think, at the time when that happened. So this series, The People versus O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story on FX tonight, really kind of takes you back to all of that. The first episode starts with the immediate aftermath of the murders. We don't see the murders and what led up to that. It just starts, the murders have happened, where's O.J., where's everybody involved, where's the dog that's the witness there, what goes on there, and then it goes from there and into the trial for the most of it. So if you remember that time, if you remember what happens, this kind of is a refresher. If you don't really remember all the details, this gives you a lot more details. And even if you do remember, you learn a lot from this series.
Now, this is based on a book, right?
Yeah, the Jeffrey Toobin book, I think The Run of His Life or something like that. And this was one of the most in-depth books kind of following the trial and exactly what happened. So, a lot of this information is out there for a lot of people who did read the books. But for me, I mean, there's so much in here that I just really had no idea. I followed it at the time, but not nearly as close as this. So, there's things like during the trial, when the jurors and everybody, and again, this is so strange that they did this, they went to OJ's house for some reason. They went to the murder scene to check that out. And that's, something that happens in trials. But then they went to OJ's house for some reason. So what Johnny Cochran did is he had a lot of the pictures taken down and replaced with a lot of things that made OJ look more African-American. There's African-American art. There were pictures of him with more African-American people because a lot of the pictures were him with his arm around white people, and that was the whole part of the defense strategy was to make OJ look like more of a person of the black man. So they replaced all this art and stuff, and you see that in this miniseries, and it's fascinating to watch and learn details like that.
Jason, for what you just said, what was the goal in that? Why would they want to make him look more an African American? What were they shooting for there exactly?
Because the defense was looking to try to make O.J. Simpson a man of the black people to the jury. They did, and the series gets into this as well, how they really targeted the jury. In their defense, it was all about race.
Yeah.
So they wanted to show that these members of the jury, that O.J. Simpson is just like you. He didn't leave the community behind, as a lot of people thought. He didn't go and just hang out with white people at country clubs. He really was a man of the people. So that's what they tried to show. And you look at this, and you're like, that's crazy. That didn't actually happen. But it's very interesting because ESPN is also doing a mini-series on this, on their 30 for 30 series, which is a fantastic documentary series. They're doing this coming up in a month or two. And one of the scenes I've seen from that is this exact scene, them replacing the art. And the art in this FX miniseries that we see is the exact same art that you see in the documentary. And so it's spot on.
You know, I forget about all this stuff because, yeah, we watch the chase and we watch the trial. You know, if the glove fits, you must acquit. I remember all this stuff, but then as I've been looking forward to this, Marcia Clark got a lot of heat because she was a woman, and I forgot about all that stuff. And I have to give you a little Time.com should be ashamed of themselves because they're talking about this that's going to air tonight, and it says the victims, Nicole Brown Simpson, who I'd like to mention, and Ronald Goodman. Oh. It was Goldman.
Yeah.
Goldman, yeah. And going back to the Marcia Clark thing, that's one of the most fascinating things for me, that because, you know, again, I did not follow this that closely, but there was a lot of stuff about her and her appearance and, yep, and all that, yep, her hair, and she had to change it and stuff like that. And we saw that in the courtroom as it was going on, and then you saw the magazines talking about it. But what we didn't see was how she felt about it. We didn't see her breaking down in tears at the end of the night. And that's what we see in a lot of this. We see the behind-the-scenes stuff, what she was going through. She was going through a really horrible custody battle with her ex-husband at the time, putting a lot more pressure on her, and then just the pressure for her to win this really high-profile case. So you get to see more of her as a person, and Sarah Paulson, who plays her, is fantastic. So you get a lot more of the human emotional side.
Jason, at the time, they were referring to this as the trial of the century. Does it still hold up as the trial of the century?
You know, I think so. We've had a lot, and a lot has changed, especially in the reality TV world, which, you know, this was a little bit of the start of when it came to watching this trial every day. And who did that? You know, I was trying to remember about the trial and when it happened, and I was talking to my parents, and I said, do you remember the trial? And they said, oh, yeah, we watched it every day. I mean, they were glued to every second of it. What other trial has that really happened with?
That was the first televised trial, pretty much, wasn't it?
From gavel to gavel, yeah. I mean, we saw more, and, you know, because of that, we haven't seen a whole lot of that, you know, especially in the high-profile ones. People are a lot more wary of it. But we do see, you know, a lot of trials these days. But that captivated the attention of the American public because, you know, a lot of these trials that we see, we don't know, like Jodi Arias or something like that. We don't know who these people are beforehand. O.J., we knew who he was. So everybody had a frame of reference at the point to watch this and just be shocked by it.
Jason, there were also so many ancillary characters, people we never heard of. You could start out with Kato Kaelin. You could go through Judge Lance Ito. The list goes on and on and on. We had never heard of those people, and then they just dominated the news on a daily basis.
Yeah, and we'll see that in here. You know, you do see Kato Kaelin. You see Lance Ito is portrayed. You know, some of the behind the scenes, the prosecutors, like Gil Garcetti.
I forgot about him.
You know who's really, really good. And we won't see him. I don't think you see him at all tonight in the premiere, but as the series gets going, Courtney B. Vance plays Johnny Cochran.
Mm-hmm.
He's fantastic. Probably one of the standouts of the series. And you get to see more of, I mean, we all know Johnny Cochran as the showboating guy. You know, like you said, you know, if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. But his, you know, why he took this case and what it meant to him as far as race relations, it's very interesting because I think a lot of people see him as just, you know, maybe a disturber, somebody who likes to stir it up. But he had actual, you know, a lot of real reasons for taking this case, and we get to learn a lot more about that.
And it starts tonight on FX. How many nights?
It is. It's a 10-episode thing. I believe it's 10 episodes. I've seen 6 of them so far. So tonight you see the murders and the aftermath of that. You see a lot of the evidence as police found it and why they found and things that led to pointing a finger at OJ. And then I believe the second episode is the Bronco chase, which is, you know, you get to go inside the car, and we don't know exactly what happened at the time, but you get to learn a lot about that.
Is Cuba Gooding Jr. the right guy to play O.J. Simpson, Jason?
You know, he's okay.
Yeah.
Like I said, Sarah Paulson as Marsha Clark is fantastic. Courtney B. Vance as Cochran is great. Cuba Gooding Jr. isn't the best in the world, I think. I didn't lose the fact that it's Cuba Gooding Jr. I didn't really fall into the fact that, okay, and block it out because it's him. And also John Travolta, I got to say. John Travolta plays Robert Shapiro. That's a little jarring, and he's so over the top with that. It really kind of takes you out of it. But, you know, it's not glaringly horrible, so you can get past it.
And Kardashian, too, with David Schwimmer, that's going to be hard to not see Ross from Friends.
It's a little hard to not see Ross because he is a little, he's that same guy who's a little beat down, he's a little morose, he's not the happiest guy in the world. And they do use that character to take some shots at the Kardashians. They take shots at the Kardashians from back then. There's a big speech that he gives at one point about fame and things like that. He's telling the kids about that. And we know what the kids are going to become at that point. And it's a little heavy-handed with that. But, you know, otherwise, it's still good stuff.
Well, it's pretty sad news, but O.J. Simpson is not happy with the ads and interviews. But he will not be able to see it because the prison in Nevada that he's in, Lovelock Correctional Center, does not have FX.
Oh, man.
So he will not get to watch it.
That's too bad.
It's crazy. It doesn't have FX, but he has regular cable. So he can watch other things on cable, which I don't understand, but you can't watch this.
Life is unfair, Jason. You know that.
Yeah, I know. Does he have the internet? Maybe he could be listening to us right now.
Oh, maybe, possibly. Jason, we appreciate it. That's Jason Nathanson from ABC News telling us about The People versus O.J. Simpson premiering tonight. Take care of yourself, Jason. Thanks.
Anytime, guys.
All right.
I can't wait.
It looks good, doesn't it? It really does. It looks great. All right, a quick break. We'll find out what Ro and Anna have next. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.